Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the island-chained paradise, with the really weird direction in the flushing of the toilets. And my very special guest is Peter Kling. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Vinny. How are you today?
Yeah, somewhat fabulous is my standard response.
Well, that's great.
Actually, technically, it's fabulous. And I would love it if you'd just kind of introduce yourself to the audience, tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Oh, that's the part I hate the most. But anyway, I'll do that. I wrote a book. I'm an author, but I didn't start out that way by any means. Writing a book was the last thing I thought I was going to wind up doing. But I have had kind of an interesting life, one which if I ever wrote an autobiography about myself, nobody would ever believe, so we won't go into too much detail, but it was unusual to say the least. As a matter of fact, to make any sort of sense out of my life, I've had to go back generations, and thanks to work that my cousin did, I find that I have generations that have been doing this for years, so my life started out very interestingly. I was born like every other child, normally, for the most part. But what was different is that when I got to about the age of 4 and a half, I started being taught biblical prophecy and biblical history. And pretty much by the time I was 5, 5 and a half, certainly by the age I was 6, I understood the complete story of the Bible. Now, not every chapter and every detail, you know, every little detail, but I understood the general story of the Bible. How we were put here by God or Yahweh, and how there are extra dimensional life forms involved in us being here, and that they've watched over us, and that they've been with us, and some have rebelled and have enslaved us. It's all written out in a very interesting book, which most people are now discrediting. The church, though, interestingly enough, has never told the truth about the Bible. And I'm going to give you a different paradigm about the Bible, because I didn't learn the Bible. I didn't learn religion. I learned exopolitics, the political affairs between humans and interdimensionals within this multiverse that we live. And yes, I said multiverse. According to the mathematics, in order for our three-dimensional Earth to be here, our three-dimensional universe, there needs to be at least 7 other dimensions to support it. Now, the interesting thing about the mathematics is that the other 7 dimensions can do just fine without us. They don't need us. And this is string theory. And this is where it all comes back to, is who God is or what God is. Because in string theory lies the God particle, and that's why they've built this huge piece of equipment, the CERN Hadron Collider, or the Hadron Collider at CERN, and they believe they found the God particle. Pure dynamic energy.
I had a joke about that. I interviewed Miran Tavakoli, and he said that what the God particle is, it's actually just the same kind of particle that we have inside every human body. So they spent $8 billion possibly risking the creation of a black hole and to destroy the Earth in order to find a new type of matter. But the type of matter that they found appeared for a second and then disappeared and had no practical benefit. I called it doesn't matter.
Ah, but it does matter. And you know, that's probably the best place to start is right with the God particle. You know, if you're going to tell a story, go right to the beginning. My own personal story, though, is that I learned the scriptures from a different viewpoint, from one that was separate from religion. I didn't learn religion. I learned that other religions existed, and, you know, what they worshipped wasn't right. I also learned or was told from a very early age not to get involved in politics here on Earth. And I'll explain why a little bit later. So I had this very early, interesting concept different than what most children grow up with. As a matter of fact, by the time I was 7 years old, I had a pretty well complete understanding of the interdimensional beings, right down to the poltergeists and demons that we have among us. And I can also pretty much tell you how to protect yourself from them. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. At the age of 9, I had something which happened which caused a paradox in my life. And this is where all of a sudden two different worlds came to be. By the age of 9, I'd already had 5 years of biblical education and knowledge of biblical history, biblical prophecy. I understood that there were interdimensional life forms involved. I didn't quite have an understanding of exactly what heaven was, but I knew that there were other dimensions beyond the three that we lived in, that we considered the fourth dimension back at that period of history, time. But we know that there needs to be at least seven other dimensions besides the dimension of time. The dimension of time is a variable dimension across all dimensions. Interestingly enough, we have a variable dimension of time even upon the planet. If you traveled at the speed of light and traveled out to Alpha Centauri and came back, that you would have aged 4.4 years, and time on Earth would have continued at normal time. Your children would be dead, and your grandchildren would be old people. But you will have only aged 4.5 years. So conventional space travel, even at the speed of light, is impractical. Totally impractical. Because by the time you accomplished your mission, think of the technology that has changed in the past 100 years. And you jump forward, you know, you say, well, I'm going to take a quick trip. You're back in 4.4 light years. And when you come back, what you find is it's about 100 years later here on Earth. So, you know, nothing happens. We sit here on Earth thinking, you know, when's he going to be back? When's he going to be back? When's he going to be back? Well, the universe does not run on Earth time, and the cosmos does not run on universal time. As a matter of fact, the time in the cosmos is calculated as 1,000 Earth years equals one day within the multiverse.
So that would make light travel pretty much an instantaneous affair if you're traveling through the universe, isn't it?
Now, you know, the interesting thing, I'll tell you what's fantastic. The theory is, of course, they can't quite prove this yet, but the theory is that thought is instantaneous. It can span the entire universe in an instant. Not only can it span the entire universe, but it can span the multiverse in an instant. Oh, wow, what a great way to travel.
Well, that reminds me of something David Icke said. He was looking at the DNA strands, and you know when you got those aerials on your car just for the radio and everything, it's got like a coiled aerial and little things up the top. He said that's exactly what our DNA looks like. It's a transmitter or a receiver.
Oh. Well, you know what? We'll get into this a little bit more, but they're finding more about the DNA. You know, all that junk DNA that's it's useless DNA. What they're finding out now is that our DNA contains the DNA of the entire planet.
Or locked in with infinite genetic knowledge, like on the fifth element, no?
Yeah, in our own DNA. And guess what happened? It's junk DNA. We don't know what it does. Somebody ripped it apart. Yeah, I wonder how that happened. You know, there's a story about some people that were first put on this planet who had perfect DNA and ate this fruit with a virus that destroyed their DNA. But that's just hearsay. But, you know, that's a good – we're going to get to that in a minute. Let's go back to when I was 9 years old, this paradox that forms. I literally had a dream that came true. And when it happened, I dreamt it, and about 10 days later, it came true. And when I lived through the experience, I was a terrified little kid. And when it was over, I ran home, and I remember running up the stairs and running into our flat or apartment there. And my mom's washing the dishes, and I said, Ma, I just had a dream that came true. And she's washing her dishes, didn't miss a beat, said, that's nice, honey, it's time for you to go to bed now. And I'm like, what? You know, my old mother just cut me off. Where in the world was I going to find the answer to this? And so I turned to science. At 10 years old, I started studying chemistry. It became my vocation in life. And so I literally grew up with a test tube in one hand and a Bible in the other. Thinking, why don't these two meet? And finally, one day, I was in my mid-20s, I was working in the laboratory. I was reading the book of Job. And I came across an interesting verse. You know, I was contemplating. I had learned to meditate, and I had learned metaphysics by the time I was 22 years old, and that opened up a lot of doors. You know, people are fascinated by quantum physics. Learn metaphysics. It's like surfing the multiverse. It's fantastic. Because that's where it all starts to open up. And it's a science that we can't prove because our science isn't advanced far enough. As a matter of fact, our science wasn't advanced far enough to even start to understand the scriptures until the late 1950s. So here, one day in the laboratory, I'm reading the book of Job, and I'm thinking, you know what? If the Bible is written for the generation that has to go through Armageddon, if they're the target audience, considering the Bible ends with Revelation, and it goes on, and it says that this paradigm ends and a new paradigm begins. This paradigm is destroyed. Now, when you look around the world today, how much do you really want to save? You know, what part of industry, the banking complex, what part of new technology like HARP? It really is a new technology. But, you know, maybe we should save the nuclear industry. That would be a good one to save. And we can find out what happens to Fukushima in another 40 years. You know, see if we have any more of those things go off or see if they can fix that. Because they don't have the technology, they will not have the technology to fix Fukushima for 35 years is what they said the week that it went off. They said, we don't even have the technology to begin to fix this.
Well, they're probably just saying that because they didn't want to tell everybody that it's actually going to be like 20, 30,000 years before we got the technology to fix it. And by then, everybody will be dead. So why matter?
Well, you see, that's the great thing about the 2045 initiative. I don't know if you've looked into this or any of your listeners have. But if you haven't, go Google it. The 2045 initiative, it's the transhuman initiative. They know they can't stop Fukushima. They got to come up with a way to keep on going. And so the end game plan is to develop nanobot technology to the point where they could replace biological humans with humans who are made of nanobots. So essentially, the 2045 initiative is the end of biological human life on this planet. Yeah, there's your deadline.
How interesting. And because the Elite have been trying to do this. It's one of their end games. I mean, like, if you were a complete psychopathic control freak, what's the last thing that you fear? And what's the only thing that you really, really want to prevent on a consistent basis? Death.
And, you know, this is something that the Dalai Lama himself has endorsed.
Well, didn't the Dalai Lama have slaves?
Yeah, I really don't know because I don't follow religion. You know, here's why. Because you get to Revelation, the 17th and 18th chapter, and religion as we know it is destroyed. So why bother following something that's going to be destroyed?
Hmm. Well, it wouldn't have stopped people. In fact, people have done this before throughout history, haven't they? They're just like, hey, this sounds like a really brilliant idea, but bro, it's going to exterminate us. It's going to completely enslave us and everything. Yeah, but the guy tells us it's a good idea. Let's just follow him blindly and not question it.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, when I was writing Letters to Earth, I was like, okay, where did this all start? And actually, I had an inkling of it before, but I needed to get the story so I could get it down in writing. And I, in doing my research, I never just look for one source. I like to find at least three and at least two before I'll say, yep, okay, now we've got support for the finding. And sometimes, you know, you got to look at the logical answer yourself in what's going on. But the main thing is feel what's going on, because if you can feel it, you'll know it before it gets to you. You know, it reminds me
of something I actually got told by a friend of mine. I wanted to quit my job once, and I asked him, you know, what should I do? And he goes, does it feel right? It's like, well, yes, it did. And quitting that job turned me into this radio show host that I am today. So, yeah, it felt very right, and it still does.
There you go. You know, here's the thing. And this takes us into the multidimensional universe. How many times have you turned around and said, I knew that was going to happen?
It actually happens to me like almost on a daily basis, and sometimes like my brain will tell me things, and yeah, Vinny do that, and I'll go and like, let's not do it and just see what happens. And exactly what I thought would happen if I didn't do something exactly does happen.
So go listen to yourself. Then. Yeah, obvious.
Oh yeah, exactly. I was just testing. You know, I was just testing. I remember this one time actually, Peter. I was at my wife's friend's wedding, and for some reason the song came into my head. You know, Electric Avenue.
We got to bust down to Electric Avenue.
Have you heard that song before? No.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, I was just humming it in my head, and I don't know why the hell it was in my head. And I got in my car, turned on the radio. I didn't even touch the dial or anything, but there it was.
We got to bust down to Electric Avenue.
And I was like, whoa. I'm starting to actually predict radio and television and even movies, in fact. I think... what was it, last year or might have been the year before, there's a film called Dredd, about Judge Dredd that came out in the cinemas.
Yeah.
And about a week before it was announced, I was like, Judge Dredd's going to be coming out again. And so I watched the old Judge Dredd, the one with Sylvester Stallone made in 2005. And then, watching the TV, here comes a new ad for a new Judge Dredd movie. It's like, I knew that was going to happen. Why? How does this happen? And more to the point, how the hell can I actually derive practical benefit? Because you can't actually, like, there's no practical benefit in knowing that Electric Avenue is playing.
You're 100% correct, but it goes to show you that you can tune in to virtually anything, not just anything, but anything in any time, forward or backward in history, any place across the multiverse, as long as you know where to go look. You know, if you walk into a library and you want to go find a book, probably now you go to a computer, you type in the name of the book, they give you the reference number to go where to go look, then you take that well, however many digit reference number they give you, the Dewey Decimal System, and you go track down the aisle and the row and the shelf and the area where that book should be located. Now, without having that little roadmap to where that information would be, how long would it take you just to walk into the library, walk right to that place where that book would be located and say, "This, yep, that's it," and walk right back out?
Einstein did that to somebody once. There was a group of students hanging around him at a university one day, and one of them asked him a question. And he goes, "Okay, well, I'll get you the answer to the question." So he walks down the aisles of books. He's just dragging his fingers along both sides of the aisles of the books, and he picks one, goes to a particular page, and then pops it down in front of the student. He goes, "Read that. That's the answer to your question." He just did it totally randomly, and it was the answer to his question.
Yeah, well, you know, you see, Einstein did something, and he was a master at it. You see, he knew how to meditate. He pondered and he saw the outcome, and that's how he saw the end result. And so then he would work backwards from the end result and come up with his equation. That's why I said God doesn't throw dice with the universe. It's not a game of chance.
Yeah.
That's why fractal technology works. That's why sacred geometry works. That's why all these things are together. Now, here we've got all of this stuff that, boy, you know, could you imagine if they taught this stuff in school? The brilliant minds that we could turn out. Oh, my goodness.
The students would stop listening to the teachers, though, and the schools wouldn't exist anymore. How bad would that be?
Well, no, you see, if the teachers knew enough to teach this stuff in schools, I can guarantee you in one generation the paradigm of this earth could be changed.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that other element as well, is the reason why people don't listen to their teachers is because their teachers don't know what they're talking about.
Well, you see, that's the problem. You can't put a turkey in front of a bunch of kids and expect the kids to learn how to gobble. Okay. Now, you can have somebody who knows how to work a turkey call teach a bunch of kids to learn how to gobble, but unless those kids can figure out how to make the little toy or how to get those mouth movements or those throat movements to work just right, they ain't going to learn anything from that turkey. So why put a turkey in front of the school system? You know, here's a fact. I just read this poll that just earlier this week. 25% of Americans believe that the sun revolves around the earth. And you wonder why we're in the trouble that we're in on this planet.
And about 50% don't know what evolution is.
And you know, evolution's a crock of crap anyway.
Oh yeah, but they don't even know. But they don't even know what the explanation of the crap is. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, you know, you ask them what year the War of 1812 was for, they'll say, "I don't know."
Oh, yeah, it's like jaywalking. Jay Leno did this all the time in New York. He's going around asking people simple questions like, "Who's the current president of the United States?" Richard Nixon? You know, just freaking retarded.
The first part of my professional life, I worked in the laboratory. And, you know, I eventually got tired of dealing with chemicals and formulas and said, people are more interesting. And oddly enough, I went from something that was very introverted and forced myself into something that was very extroverted. I got into sales and marketing in telecommunications. And I spent actually more than 15 years in that industry. So I got to meet a lot of people, talk to a lot of people, and interact with a lot of people along the way. And I was still able to carry on my research. See, I forgot where I was going exactly with that one, but it brings us to a point to a lot of different points when you look at the telecommunications industry in itself or communications.
Yeah, that's where I used to work as well.
It's dealing with other people, but it's also, you know, what one of the reasons I liked it is I pretty much was able to do what I want, and you know what, I could see my outcome. And I was able to learn and apply different rules within metaphysics that I had learned along the way from the scientific aspect, it was now being applied in my everyday life. But the interesting thing was, metaphysics opened up the doors for me. I didn't just have one dream that came true. Actually, it never stopped. I was able to see and still can see future events. It's been part of my life all the way through my life. Back in 2002, the year 2000, I was trading commodities and my broker asked me, who do you like for president? And I said, who do I like or who do I think is going to be the next president? He said, well, both. Now, I don't get involved in politics. I just don't. I was told not to,
Not Earth-based politics, anyway.
Not exopolitics. Yeah, I take sides there. exopolitics just depends. Exopolitics it is what has brought Earth politics to fruition, because it was the Anunnaki that gave the Sumerians. Remember Sumeria, the cradle of civilization. It was the Anunnaki that gave them the idea or the instructions for both government and religion. Yeah. And we've been saddled with that crap ever since.
Well, apparently those discoveries in ancient Sumeria happened kind of like overnight, and then they disappeared overnight just as quickly.
Well, you remember the Iraqi war? Not the first one, the second one, when we went into Baghdad and all of a sudden all of the museums were looted?
Yeah, yeah. They tried to cover up all the evidence of the ancient world and what have you, because, look, if everybody knew how history really transpired and what have you, and they had artifacts to prove the such, almost every single institution would be revolted against, don't you think? Because they've just been lying to us this whole freaking time.
Well, I'm going to tell you something right now. Religion's been lying to us right from the beginning. Religion has lied to us about the information in the Bible, and I can prove that every religion, which is Christian or Judaism, Jewish-based, and this may even stretch over into Islam to some extent, has been lying to you, but I know Islam has been lying to you anyway because they all came from the same group. And here is the proof. And the proof is found right in the scriptures themselves. You go to Genesis, the second chapter, and start reading at the 21st verse. It says, and I'll paraphrase this, I'll quote it the best that I can, and God said that it's not good for the man to be alone. So I'm going to create a helper for him. So he causes a sleep to come over the man. He opens the flesh, he removes a rib, closes the flesh, sends the rib down to genetic engineering with a note saying, can you please bioengineer a female from this genetic sample? Genetic engineering turns around and says, yep, okay. They turn around. They change the Y chromosome now for an X chromosome. They flip a couple switches on the DNA. So the different hormones kick in at different rates. They put it in the shake and bake, and a couple of months later, out comes a fully grown adult female, and they bring her before Adam. And Adam says, at last, this is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. This one was taken from man. I will call her woman. Yeah, she's my sister and she's my clone. And Adam understood it. Adam understood that that they used his genetic information. And that's why he also mentioned the rib, because he knew what part was taken. The flesh of his flesh and the bone of his bones, that genetic information was used to recreate a female version of Adam, and essentially Eve was Adam's cloned twin sister. Ooh, incest. No, it's not incest. It's the seeding of the first human couple on the face of the planet. There wasn't anybody that existed before. And they both had perfect DNA. They both had absolutely perfect DNA, but they had something more. They had something that no other creation on this planet had. You see, when you look at how Adam was made, he was actually made out of the elements, out of the actual elements of the ground. And then it says God breathed the breath of life into him. God put the soul into the body, which was formed based on previous genetic references, which we could find in the fossil record. Pretty much the final last model, which was used for modern humans, was Cro-Magnon man. And pretty much after what happened to our DNA, we're back to Cro-Magnon man status. We die. But when we had what the original copy had perfect DNA, and that DNA would have replicated itself perfectly indefinitely. Now, here's the interesting thing. When you read this account, God didn't, according to the Bible, they didn't make two bodies out of the elements. They only made one body because that's all they needed. Now, here's the real question. Who are the genetic engineers? And why do the churches, or why does religion tell you that the creation of woman is a holy mystery? Yeah. You see, they've been lying to you. Oh, well, it's a holy mystery of God. We don't know the answer to that question. Now, here's the interesting thing.
It's we kind could, of like a bank robber or something like that. You go up to him and you go, bro, where's all the money? And he goes, it's a mystery.
What money? Yeah, why don't you guys get a TV crew in here and you can do the next crime drama and figure it out? You know, yeah, it's like, what's going on? And you see, because we don't have that perfect DNA, the story gets lost along the way. It's, you know, it's like the old game of, well, we call it telephone here in the United States. You get a bunch of people lined up together, and you have one person gives a message to the first person, and then they turn around and give that message, the same message to the next person, and so forth and so on, all the way down the line. And you find out, and then you go see what message you got at the end.
Chinese whispers.
Okay.
That's what we call it.
That's what it is down under. So that's why I described it. If you guys are up here, everybody would know. So, but you know, you have that game. And by the time you get to the end, the story's changing. And that's what they say about the Bible. Oh, the story's changed. No, wait a minute. You see, the biblical scholars who study the Dead Sea Scrolls, and this is a very closed society. You want to talk about some privately held information. There is a lot more to the Dead Sea Scrolls than are actually being released. But what has been released, when it's compared to the scriptures from a modern Bible today, the scholars say that there is extremely little difference. That the differences that they found were either minor grammatical differences or spelling errors. So when you look at something that was written 2,000 years ago and you say, okay, well, what did it get turned into today? And you look at it today and it's like, wait a minute. It's the same message. So now I ask again, the message hasn't changed. But who are the genetic engineers? Now, here's the curious thing. We couldn't have even asked that question until our science had developed far enough along to realize that DNA could be genetically manipulated, that DNA could be engineered. And now there's a whole technology based around engineering, bioengineering DNA, vegetable DNA, animal DNA, human DNA, mix and match them all together. They actually didn't have this knowledge until the late 1960s. So you could never understand what was written in Genesis 22, 21 through 23 until after 1960, or at least toward the end of the 1960s, when you could understand what genetic engineering was, and that's exactly what happened there in that account. Now, here's another interesting thing. Yeah. You look at the fossil record of Earth, And all of us, basically, nothing happens on this planet for about 3 billion years. And then you get the Precambrian period, which for about a billion years, all we have is single-cell bacteria, mostly cyanobacteria, growing and populating and inhabiting the oceans of the ancient primordial oceans. And after a billion years, about the most sophisticated thing we have are phytoplankton, zooplankton, and some simple jellyfish, but they're not sure about the jellyfish because jellyfish don't leave much of a fossil. And then all of a sudden, literally, geologically speaking, overnight, there is so much DNA dumped on this planet that there has never been such an amount of DNA on this planet since. There have only been reduced numbers of genetic information on this planet. It would be easier to explain. Picture this. 1600s. You're sitting in the middle of the woods in what is now Central Park, and you're camped out with your family. You're one of the local Native Americans there, and you all cuddle in for the night and you go to sleep. And when you wake up the next morning, Manhattan is built around you. Skyscrapers, hotels, everybody's there. It's all built around you. It would be easier to explain how that could happen than how all that genetic information just spontaneously appeared. Scientists don't have a clue. They say, oh, well, the oxygen level's at 21-23%, and life just happened. Yeah, life just happened to the extent that it's never happened. We've never had so much life on this planet since.
What is it about the scientific profession that makes them only look at evidence, but not actually do any thinking? I don't get it. I mean,
educated ignorance.
Ignorance. See, there has to be a way of splicing those words together. Something between education and ignorance. I'll come up with it in a minute. But anyway, sorry. Continue.
Well, that's basically what it is. What academia has become today is what the church was 1,000 years ago. Oh, you got to prove that. You're saying something different than what we've told you? You're going to burn in hell. Let's burn him at the stake. You know, that's the level that academia has been reduced to. Now, interestingly enough, you look at my ancestry, and my ancestry was some of those people that were burned at the stake. On my father's side, my ancestors were Huguenots, and they, because of religious persecution in the late 1600s or early 1700s, they fled France and went to Germany. But when you look at the history of the Huguenots, they were among the first people to protest in what the church was teaching, and what started the protest? A priest translated the Bible into the local dialect of French, and the local people were able to read it. And that's when the church started burning people at the stake, because people were finding out the truth and they were criticizing the church. And the church has lied to us ever since they came into existence. Funny how that happens.
Which makes one believe that they
and
came
I'm not
into
a Huguenot.
yeah, but they came into existence for that very reason, I suspect.
Well, when you go back and look at it, okay, let's look for some more scientific evidence. Now here's my explanation. The only way you can logically explain how that much DNA material gets here on this planet is through extraterrestrial or interdimensional means. There is no other real explanation. You don't just have a city pop up overnight. You just don't. I don't know if you folks have them down under, but here in America, we have what we call a pill bug. And you usually find these things in damp, dark places, you know, sometimes under some rotten wood, or, you know, they'll make their home in the bottom of your wet basement. And they just look like a brown segmented beetle. They look like a really tiny millipede, you know, only about a half inch long. And we call them pill bugs or sow bugs or potato beetles. Those are common names for them here in the United States. Well, once upon a time, back in the Cambrian era, there were over 17,000 different kinds of those things, and they all lived in the ocean. Now there's only one. From over 17,000 different kinds down to our last variety. How about that? Talk about extinction level events. And yet that's what we're facing with Fukushima, is an extinction level event.
Yeah. I was listening to Dr. Jonathan Gray. He's an archaeologist from New Zealand, and he went out to the Ararat mountain ranges just outside Syria and kind of very close to the border with Turkey. And they found frickin' Noah's Ark, bro. It was 500 cubits in length. It had five decks, and it had titanium rivets holding it together. And all the wood was fossilized and everything like that. Boats sitting on top of the frickin' mountain. And they're
what kind of rivets?
Titanium.
Ah, now here's an interesting thing. You know, the world was supposed to end, according to the media. May I clarify?
There were actually something like nine elements, including titanium, within those rivets. So there was some pretty advanced metallurgy going on, and we've only been able to work with titanium in the last 60, 70 years or something.
Yeah, and I want to point this out. Because you opened up a little Pandora's box here. Where'd they get that technology from? Where did they get the technology for that metallurgy?
Well, in the Bible, it said before the Great Flood, I think it was like they had an industrial revolution about 200 years or 300 years before the Great Flood kind of thing. Not entirely dissimilar to today. I operate under the belief that there was once a very technologically advanced global society, and it just got totally wiped out, and most records of it went with it.
You know, I started to mention media has told us that, the world was going to come to an end December 21st, 2012. It was supposed to be the end of the Mayan long count calendar, the Long Baktun, which is 5,125 years. Now, if you go back in history, 5,125 years, it puts you at the same time as the recordings of the events in the Book of Enoch. Now, the Book of Enoch records that we had an alien invasion. As is recorded in the Book of Enoch, the Watchers invaded Earth. And he actually names the top 20 of them, but there was over 200 that were involved, at least in the book. And the Bible doesn't say much about this. The Bible says that the daughters, that men grew in numbers on the face of the earth, and the sons of God saw that earth women were hot, and so they came taking wives for themselves, all whom they chose, and the women were giving birth to this hybrid, half interdimensional, half human. Now, what do you mean interdimensional? A life form that has the capability of going from one set of dimensions, like our three-dimensional world here, into another set of dimensions at will, instantaneously. Not only can they change dimensions instantaneously at will, but they can also materialize into, obviously, our genetic form. Now, people say, well, how is this possible? Or people say, that's impossible. No, it's not impossible. They are formed out of a different type of energy than we are. Exactly what energy? I believe it's more along a crystalline energy as opposed to a biological energy. We're down to the atomic structure. When you want to get technical, everything works on atomic structure. And so what we're made up of is mostly little bits and pieces of carbon atoms and hydrogen atoms, oxygen atoms, and so forth and so on. I guess on the open market with inflation, maybe chemically we're worth about $3, $4, depending on the exchange rate. But you know, we are a total different base, and we're biological. We're carbon-based biological. These are energy-based crystalline, different structure. And they can change, they have the ability to change their energy. In other words, hey, you want to sit there and look like a rock? I'll be a rock for this afternoon. You want to be look like a human? I'll be a human this afternoon. They can change the energy right down to the atomic structure, so they can control their energy down to our atomic structure. And hence, they were able to produce sperm just like human men could. Or do. Supposed to, anyway. And so here they procreate with women, and they create this hybrid offspring called the Nephilim. Now, keep in mind, this is going on at the beginning of the last long count Bakhtun that the Mayans use as their calendar. These are the events of the Book of Enoch. And what happens is, evidently, we get some insight into this through Greek mythology. The story of Zeus and Hercules, Hercules' mother was a mortal woman. When you go deeper into that story, he's got over 100 brothers, all fathered by Zeus, all with different mortal women. So, you know, there might be a little bit more to mythology than what we think is myth. There's a reason why, you know, it's interesting. There's
that reminds me of the start of Lord of the Rings, when they give the preface and the big battle in the beginning, and then everybody forgets about it, and history became legend, legend became myth.
Well, you see, exactly, and how many people around the world say, "Ah, the Bible's a myth"? Wait a minute, no. Religion is a myth. The Bible is a exopolitical record of 6,000 years of alien involvement in human history, or interdimensional involvement in human history. Either way, it's extraterrestrial. They're not from Earth, nor are they from this dimension. Not originally, anyway. Now, people are saying, oh, what about, you know, the races from different locations, whether it may be the Pleiades or anywhere across the galaxy, the Greys, the Aryans, the Reptilians, all of these three-dimensional alien races, which we actually have nothing to go by but some chiseled carvings in stone and some ancient paintings. And if these things could shape into any form that they want, you know, it doesn't take a big stretch of the imagination that they could show up as giant gods if they wanted, or smaller versions or whatever. They could show up in spaceships. Like, they don't have the technology. They bioengineered life on Earth, more than likely. So, you know, we can't throw anything out of the box, so to speak. We have to stand on the outside of the box and look in. You know, some things we can throw out, like, okay, was the Earth made in 6 days? Heck no. Where did religion come up with that idea? Throw that one out of the box. Did man evolve? Most likely not. Not if there's a possibility that we were genetically engineered. Because when you look at the fossil record, that's what it would show, is that different species of Homo sapien have been on this planet for a very long time. It was just a matter of choosing a copy which was most environmentally friendly for the time of the creation of the first perfect DNA human couple and seed the planet. Now, you have to look for some intelligent backing for this. You know, what would be the purpose? Well, we have a really, really big universe. As a matter of fact, they now believe that there's well over a trillion Earth-like planets. Nice. Room for expansion. You got to start somewhere. And you see, here's the thing. We all think in Earth years. A good percentage of the people in the United States still think that the sun revolves around the Earth. But, you know, once upon a time, people believed the Earth was flat. And it's not, obviously.
Have you ever noticed that this is kind of like the lesson of history? One guy's right and everybody else and the entire frickin' planet is full of crap?
You know, I hate to say that, but yeah. And it's not that I'm so great. It's that I've studied this for so long and I've had good information to look at it. And I can look at it scientifically and logically. And then I use the metaphysical side. And this is what's neat about metaphysics. You see, and boy, before I get into this, let's continue with the alien subject here, or the extraterrestrial subject. So here we have this record of interdimensionals. Remember how we got to this was with Noah's Ark and the metallurgy. When we look at the record that is in the Book of Enoch, one of the things that they taught the humans was how to work metal. They gave us the technology of metallurgy, and they also showed us how to make knives, spears, swords, armor. Nice. So we can protect ourselves from the Nephilim. Cool.
Yeah, and for the uninitiated, ladies and gentlemen, metallurgy is not an allergy to metals, okay?
Yes.
I thought I'd throw that in there. I thought that was cool.
Some people may develop them. I don't know. Let's see. But you know,
technically,
and now,
I'm allergic to mercury. Am I metallurgic?
Well, I guess. Yeah, I guess we would all be mercury metallurgic. It's kind of deadly to humans.
Yeah. Maybe I could get some kind of a toxic mercury-containing vaccine to prevent me from the mercury, eh? That sounds like something the medical profession would recommend.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's soon to be our spring. You folks are going down into the autumn months now. But we're headed into the spring, and so I like to fish, and I didn't get a chance to fish this past season. I decided I'm going to spend some time fishing this year. And so I got a local fishing laws pamphlet and started reviewing the laws on, you know, getting ready for the season. And I was looking at the different species of fish, and you know what? There is a prescribed amount of fish to eat, and the reason why you should only eat that prescribed amount, and it's because most of it is – well, no, there's two contaminants, PCB, polybiphenyl chloro, PCBs, polybiphenyl, gee, I forget what the last one, the last chemical element is, but it's a plastic that settles right down to the bottom of the water. It's made.
It's not BPA, bisphenyl alanine, is it?
No. It's a... they had a whole problem with this years ago with General Electric dumping all this stuff in that wound up in the Hudson River, and they use it in insulation for – or they used to use it in insulation for transformers. But anyway, it's either that contaminant –
I don't think we really need to go into it and explain what it is. I mean, how many people know what the word – what the letters DNA stand for, you know? Nobody does, so bugger it.
But the other contaminant is mercury. Mercury, you should only eat so many and if you're a pregnant woman, you shouldn't eat the fish at all. Isn't that sad? What a state of affairs this planet has gotten into where you can't even go down to the local pond and catch a fish and eat it. Or if you do, you can only eat one a month because if you eat any more than that, it might kill you.
I saw a hilarious picture on Facebook the other day. It's a dude with a top hat with his hands out, you know, that kind of, well, you know, sort of position. And he says, look, I'm not saying that we kill all the stupid people. Let's just remove the warning labels off of everything and let the problem sort itself out.
Oh, you were saying it. I was thinking it. That's fantastic. Myself and my kids have this conversation over and over again about stupid people. Yeah. I said and I identified that years ago. I said, the problem is that they started putting warning labels on everything. You know, as a kid, I used to make some extra money by cutting lawns. And I knew enough. My dad told me, don't stick your hand underneath there if you want to keep your fingers. Now, if you're a kid, that would probably be a good thing to know. And if you're an adult, you would pretty much take for granted that you should already have enough intelligence to realize that if you stick your fingers underneath a machine that's got a rotating blade that's traveling at probably well over 200 miles an hour, you're going to lose a few fingers. But no.
I've got some bad news for you. My wife's friend married a lawyer, and he was mowing his lawn, and he had to like get his lawnmower up a rise, like a step kind of thing. So while the lawnmower was still running, he tried to pick it up from underneath.
Yeah, you know, and he's an attorney, so there you go.
Yeah.
It's just... You know, all you have to do is take the warning labels off. But you know, here's the other side of the coin, and this one's real, is that all you have to do is shut off the electric, like with an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, which could be caused by a nuclear device or by a solar blast or by possibly a Nibiru type event where we might have a brown dwarf star passing between us and the sun. Brown dwarf star is basically an iron star. You want to talk about something that's going to be electrically charged? Look out and hold on. Now, we had a scandal going on here in the United States, and most people weren't even aware of it. If you were awake on the internet or friend on my Facebook page, you probably were well aware of it. And that is that back in the summer, there was an earthquake off the coast of South Carolina. And come to find out, it wasn't just a plate, a tectonic movement. It was a nuclear movement. They record differently. And then we find out all the backstory to what went on. And their plan was that there's still two missing nukes. Their plan was to detonate these nukes above the United States, causing an EMP. And it's believed that 90% of Americans would be dead inside of 2 years if they shut the electric off. 90%. And those aren't my numbers. Those are the government's numbers on what they would expect to have happen should we have an EMP. If the grid is not turned back on, in 2 years, 90% population reduction. So
yeah, that sounds about right. We had a power cut here last year, and it lasted for like 9 hours. You know, like 9 hours without electricity, you actually start to realize how totally dependent you are on it, like utterly dependent. Oh, let's have a coffee. Oh, Frank, the power's out. Oh, I can't see anything. Let's turn a light. Oh, Frank, the power's out. Oh, I'm bored. I need to watch something. Oh, the power's out. I want to communicate with somebody. Oh, the power's out. See? Society stops dead in its tracks. And I mean the word dead literally when the power disappears. That's it. So I completely agree with what you're saying.
We were without power several times here. Let's see. First, we had Hurricane Irene, which put the power out here for about 5 or 6 days. And then we had, shortly after that, a freak snowstorm, which took down. It was early October. There's still leaves on the trees here. And it took down tons of trees around here, power lines. We were without electricity for 8 days. And then we got hit with Hurricane Sandy last November. And I've lived in the Northeast of America for most of my life. And I have never in my life ever seen a hurricane that's come up the East Coast of the United States in the autumn of the year and make a left-hand turn and go right through a cold front. It's just never, ever, ever happened before in anyone's memory.
Well,
even
if you have a look at
meteorologists.
During the satellite imagery of that, some people exposed that there was an enormous quantity of chemtrailing activity along one side of the front. And what they were doing is they were heating up the atmosphere, and that was pushing it up the coast. They actually literally weather controlled and forced it up the coast.
Oh, sure they did. As a matter of fact, they did that too with Hurricane Irene. Now, I just wanted to mention these little... So, these three events happened in 2 years. Now, the first one for 4 days, that was Hurricane Irene. You know, it's interesting. And that was a HAARP event. For anybody who doesn't know what HAARP is, go look it up on Google. H-A-A-R-P. Look it up. Anyway, HAARP is used to control the weather, among other things, and it controls Hurricane Irene, brought it right over as it dumped tons of rain. There were streams that couldn't turn around and put out a match. It became torrent river valleys and just tore up roads and stranded people for weeks. I'm glad I wasn't involved in that. But, you know, after the storm, I remember sitting outside. It was a beautiful morning. I mean, the temperature was like perfect. The birds were chirping. The sun was shining. It was like just the most beautiful day that you could. It was one of those days that you wish that every day of the year was like. And I was sitting there and I was mad at the world, angry. And I'm like, why am I so angry? And the electric was out, but that didn't bother me because I've been without electricity. My parents lived up in Maine for 5 years with no electricity. When I was a kid, my dad used to go up to Maine once a month and live with no electricity. once a year we would go up for the month of November. My dad liked to hunt, and so we went up there, stayed with an old timer who lived in a 150-year-old house, and he had no electricity. So you learn to deal with the outhouse, and you learn to deal with heating up the water, and you learn to deal with taking a bath in a bucket. And that's just the way it is. You know, when you don't have electricity, you learn to cope without. You learn how to cook your food on a wood stove. And when the electricity went out here, though, I saw where the chinks of the armor were on the four-day trip around. But, you know, here's the interesting thing. When I realized something, being all upset and all bent out of shape there, being all angry at the world, something dawned on me. I was like, why am I so angry? And then I thought, ha, HAARP. HAARP. I've been hit with HAARP for the last 12 hours. No wonder I'm so pissed off at the world. And, you know, as soon as I realized that, I felt much better. Interesting. So, you know,
it's like mind control. You know that you're under mind control if you never question that you're under mind control. But as soon and I think that's kind of like the same phenomenon. I'm so angry. Why am I? Oh, I'm being mind controlled. And all of a sudden the mind control disappears, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you see, you have to become aware of it.
Yeah.
And once you're aware of it, it goes away. And see, that's one of the things that's very important, that your listeners should continue to listen to shows like this. And if you know nothing about Letters to Earth, You Can Survive Armageddon, go buy it. Because in it, I explain where we came from, why we are here, why things are so screwed up, and what our future is. And trust me, you're not going to want to miss the future. It's going to be fun. It really is.
I already find what's going on now to be quite fun. I guess it's because maybe I was raised on violent video games and what have you, and I love the idea of being the good guy going into battle against hordes of crazed zombies and stuff like that. So, you know, I fit right into this current reality.
You ever see the movie Mars Attacks?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How did they defeat the Martians?
With country music.
With words. With words. Yeah, I know how to make their heads explode.
Yeah.
And it ain't by yodeling. Well, their heads... there you go. You know, Boy, I wish I could do that. If I started to do that, you'd shut down the show because of static. Give me a bushel basket. I might be able to carry a tune then. But yeah, it's with words. It's with words. And where do you find those words? Guess where? Within the scriptures themselves.
Yeah, I've interviewed a number of people who talk about the power of the word Jesus, you know, and it's quite interesting because I've found that as well. Even if I don't 100% go into all of the Christian structure and belief structure and what have you personally, I've noticed that whenever I'm actually in a bad place, I can just say that word and I actually just feel better, you know.
Remember that. Remember that. It's interesting. You know, the King James Version of the Bible removed the name Yahweh or Jehovah over 7,000 times if it was put back correctly. And it would be good if you want to actually learn what's going on, go find a good modern Bible where they have replaced God's name because it's important. Because you get to a place like Acts, the second chapter, in the 21st verse, it says, all those calling on the name of Yahweh, or in English, Jehovah, shall be saved.
Yeah.
And you see, the apostles, interestingly enough, came to Jesus complaining one day, hey, there's a guy in another town that's expelling demons by your name.
And then Jesus said, no way. And then his apostles said, Yahweh.
That's good. No, you know, but the apostles were all upset because, you know, he was commanding demons in the name of Jesus. And they were like, you know, what should we do? And Jesus said, hey, if he's not working against us, then they are working with us, aren't they? You know? So it just goes to show you. Now, I'm going to give you a modern-day application of that. Interestingly enough, just about the time I published Letters to Earth, I was just finishing up the book, I met this wonderful, marvelous woman, very brilliant, very intelligent. Never met her in person, actually. We met first on the internet and then on phone. Had an excellent conversation with her. She's Jewish. She's Russian. She's lived in Moscow, Tel Aviv, Paris, New York. She's a designer. She's an artist. She's also the great-great-grandniece of Tsar Nicholas, the last Tsar of Russia. It's interesting. The day before we actually made contact, she went to an Islamic holy man. And the Islamic holy man said, the man that you are seeking, you will find within the next day. And so she thought it was kind of a romantic encounter type thing, but it wasn't exactly that because I had just done all the research on her family history for the last 200 years. And it's very interesting. She related a story to me. Now, here's a Jewish woman born in Russia, lived in these major cities. Her parents practiced black magic on her from the time she was 12 years old with the reward of great wealth. And her grandmother actually understood why this was going on. One of their rituals included setting this woman on fire when she was a child. She's got scars on her stomach, but they're not, you know, like really disfigured from what I understand. I've never seen them. But she was plagued with demonic forces all of her life. And she said to me that she was essentially being held captive in the apartment that she was living in New York. Actually, I'm sorry, it was in New Jersey at the time, New York metropolitan area, just across the river. She was fighting. One day she was actually fighting these two shadow figures who were attacking her and forcing her down to her couch. And she said she just couldn't. She didn't know what exactly they wanted to do with her, but she just had all to do within her strength to fight them, and she was losing. And in desperation, she yells out the name Jesus Christ, and they vanished. The next day she went to a church. She actually started studying with Jehovah's Witnesses. Interesting.
Very interesting. And in fact, a lot of abductees, alien abductees, get that sleep paralysis thing on when the aliens are standing around their bed and they somehow manage to paralyze you. And allegedly, some people have been managed to, use the name of Jesus to make them go, and they disappear, kind of like they're allergic to it or something. Or at least some of them are. Some of them are. I've heard other stories as well that somebody has said Jesus, and they just laugh at them and just kidnap them and rape them with their anal probe. And we'll be right back after the break. AnthonyEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest is author Peter Kling. We'll be right back, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, it is now hour number 2 of the fastest, 3 hours in talk radio, 2 hours, I guess. I kind of get confused sometimes because when you're going from a methodology where you've been doing a 2-hour show for like 3 years and then you suddenly go into a 3-hour show, all your intros and everything have to change. It's kind of like breaking the smoking habit. I've got to stab out that smoldering 2-hour show. All right, my very special guest is author Peter Kling. Welcome back.
My pleasure. So we left off with defending ourselves against these shadow forces. Interesting. Now, you notice a common theme running through here. We have some sort of genetic engineers doing biological engineering on the first human planted on first godlike human. Let's make a specification. Because when Adam was created, the account says that the angels cheered, they applauded, they were happy. This was the next generation. The baby of the family was born. And that's what all the fanfare was about. Now, you see, when you go back and look at the account, we get kidnapped right off the bat. And who kidnaps us? Reptilians. Seems to be a major theme in the Bible. It was a serpent in the story that caused the problem. And here we are, you know, we've had some people say, oh, well, we're being ruled by reptilian shapeshifters. And you go to the end of the Bible and it talks about a great dragon. So there's this serpent or reptilian theme that seems to permeate not just the scriptures, but when we look around at the symbology of the world, all the symbols, look at how many snake and dragon symbols there are. You know, there's two things that permeate virtually every culture around the world. One is the flood story. The other one is dragon law. Virtually every society has dragon law. It's most recognized in the Far East.
On an amusing side note, a New Zealand UFO researcher, just as a joke, sent an Official Information Act request to the government. It was one of a number, but it was just a joke. And he says, can you prove that the Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key, who used to work for the Federal Reserve, incidentally, is not a reptilian shapeshifter here to enslave the human race? And so the government went away. It took them 40 days. And they came back and they says, no, we can't prove that he's not.
Unbelievable.
Like, wouldn't his last physical do? You know, it's like, well, we've got his blood on file. It doesn't appear to have like triple DNA coding, or he doesn't appear to be cold blooded or anything. Like, nah, bro, no. It's actually more of a fact that the bureaucrats are retarded, just as retarded as the media, who thought that the guy was serious about asking that question.
Well, either that or there's the other side of the coin where they took him seriously and they answered honestly. No, we can't.
Yeah, well, there's a possibility.
There is that side of the coin.
Yeah.
So we ran into a similar situation here, actually. I do a show on Wednesday nights. Well, here in the States, it's Wednesday night. World Watchers, you can find it on the web or on the LNM radio network, late night in the Midlands. But there was a story that had broke that a researcher at Harvard found a message from God or in our DNA. There was a God message. And so my co-host called up Harvard, asked them, and he recorded all this. Charles, we can't actually play it. Well, he did play it, but I don't know if we let it get out on the air, if we put it out like on YouTube and it went viral, we might get in trouble. So, but anyway, because we did at one point, he did say he was off the record, and their response was quite amazing. But he went right through the gatekeepers. He got to the science department. The receptionist at the science department said, "Well, let me see if I can find that article." She finds the article, and she says, "Let me direct you to the right department." She directs the call to a spokesperson for the science department, and so he's asked about, is this story true? Was a message, a God message found in the DNA? And the spokesperson, first thing that they ask is, are we on the air? Or is this being recorded? And he answered honestly, yes, it is. And so he said, well, I will not say anything further if this is being recorded. End of subject. He said, well, can we talk off the record? And so the person agreed, said, okay, we can talk off the record. He said, okay, I'll stop the recording, not a problem, which he didn't. And so he said, recording stopped. So he asked the gentleman again, he says, is there any truth to this story? He says, well, off the record, no. Well, wait a minute. Off the record, it doesn't exist. Off the record, the story didn't exist. And that's what this guy said. It wasn't just no. He said, off the record, there's no truth to the story. Does that mean that officially the story does exist? It's like, wait a minute. That's like an oxymoron, a double negative. If off the record he says, no, the story, there's no truth to the story, does that mean officially that the story does exist?
Hmm. That's weird, man.
Yeah, it's no, I don't have any money.
Mm. Look at more like somebody's full of crap,
Yeah, and so we couldn't. We did play it on the show. We talked about it, but it's not anything that we put out on YouTube. It's just it's just interesting. Somebody all breaches the truth, and then all of a sudden, no, that official truth never existed. It's like Egyptology. They tell us all about the Egyptian culture. It's all crock of crap. It's all a bunch of lies. Robert Schock, pretty much Dr. Robert Schock, geologist, professor at the University of the City of Boston. He did geological surveys around the Sphinx and of the Sphinx itself. And through his findings, he concluded it and pretty much accepted, based on what colleagues have supported unwittingly in his findings, that the Sphinx dates from 7,000 to 15,000 years ago. And interestingly enough, when he did his ground penetrating radar search, He's claimed that there was a chamber 25 meters down under the paw of the Sphinx, exactly where Edgar Casey said it would be. And he said, there's something in there. We're getting a bounce back on the radar. Well, Dr. Zahari Awas, the official mouth of Egyptology and New World Order shill, vehemently denied all of this. And he went and he said that there's no truth to the story. It's unsubstantiated. He said, as a matter of fact, and there's a video, there was a video on YouTube where he's standing at these pipes that are driven under the Sphinx, and he's saying, we're pumping water out from the Sphinx, and we're down 15 meters, and there's no chamber, and the reason we're pumping the water out is because there's been surveys that indicate that there's water under here, and it's degrading the integrity of the foundation of the Sphinx, and the Sphinx might start sinking, and to prevent that, we need to pump the water out. And then they put up a Red Bull expedition, motorcycle expedition out in front of the Sphinx. Interesting, Red Bull. Two bulls with the sun in the middle. Did you know that there was 96 terms for sun worship in the Egyptian language, and there were 76 terms for sun worship. 72 of them were interchangeable for bull worship.
Mm.
Yeah. And so now here's this Red Bull event that's going on outside of the Sphinx, and it's taking forever. They've got bulldozers out in front of the place and all sorts of equipment. And while this is going on, they're pumping water out from under the Sphinx. They've actually tunneled down under the Sphinx now. Interestingly enough, while this is going on, I had a friend that was studying history, and he had a friend that was on an archaeological dig on the plateau of Giza, not on the Sphinx dig, but on something else. And he was getting messages back from his friend over there that said something's going on under the Sphinx. They brought stuff up from underneath it. Now, interesting thing, Dr. Zahari Awas said that they were down 15 meters pumping water out, and they didn't find any chamber. Dr. Robert Schock said you had to be down 25 meters, Zahari Awas. You got to go down another 10 meters to find the chamber. Well, somewhere they found the chamber, and it became official that they found the tomb of Osiris under the Sphinx. But the tomb of Osiris was empty. Now, interestingly enough, according to the contact that was on the Temple Mount, I'm sorry, on the Giza Plateau, he said that there were items that were removed from underneath the Sphinx, and I actually saw pictures of these alleged items that were crated up behind a barred gate in an enclosure. I can't tell you what was in them. It was just crated up stuff, you know, kind of like Indiana Jones type stuff, crated up and marked for shipment. The night that the stuff disappeared, six people were dead, and men in black suits were seen at the Giza Plateau. Why would you wear a black suit in the desert? So, Dr. Zahari Awas said
if they were a fan of what's it called? The Mobile Sweat Lodge?
Yeah. Alrighty, that yeah, it brings me back to the Gestapo. Wasn't it the Gestapo agent that walked it, that comes in into the dig in Egypt when they're searching for the Ark of the Lost Covenant, or Lost Ark of the Covenant, and he's dressed all in black. Yeah, we imported Nazi technology in World War II into the United States. Interestingly enough, it came in under Operation Paperclip. It was only reported about 1,000 limited to about 1,000 scientists came over, when indeed the number is actually closer to 3,000 scientists and close to 50,000 support staff, including members of the Gestapo,
yeah, MBSS. That's what I heard, that there were tens of thousands of Germans who got imported, and they got put into very important positions all around the United States. One of the largest imports, I believe, which was off the books, was their mind control specialists. Germany had a program called MK, or Mind Control, And then they imported them over to the United States. And then magically, CIA starts up a giant operation called MK Ultra.
The next step. Now, I'm going to make a connection here in just a second with all this. But there's some interesting things that are going on. We have this whole alien, interdimensional situation, extraterrestrials. The biblical history is full of them. One that I particularly like, which brings some legitimacy to us being ruled by alien shapeshifters or interdimensional shapeshifters. Interesting thing about interdimensional, they are not limited to being in the same place as you are. In other words, you can be inhabited by one of these creatures. They're not three-dimensional, so they can take up the same place that we do. And seeing as our bodies are only vessels for our souls, we can cohabit within the same vessel. And that's how demon possession takes place, and there's a long history of that. As a matter of fact, when you go to the gospel account of Legion, there were 1,000 life forms that were inhabiting one human body. Think about that. That's kind
of... You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of a movie called The Grudge. Have you ever seen The Grudge?
I've not seen it. I've heard about it, though.
It's freaking creepy, man. My cousin's husband was the producer on it, and it was just like... One of the really freaky things, and it was kind of like a demon-possessed girl came back to life after she was murdered by her husband, and she just basically sits in this house, this haunted house, and kills anybody who comes in, sucks the life out of them kind of thing. And the character, lead actress, I think it was Sarah Michelle Gellar, she goes out and she tries to investigate, you know, where this girl came from, how she became the way that she is. And there was this ancient Japanese witchcraft practitioner who was pulling demons out of people and making her daughter swallow them. And so she was literally like a hotbed full of demons.
Yeah, and that's very possible. That type of thing could happen. Now, we go back to who are these demonic forces? Going back to the Book of Enoch again, there's an interesting passage. The Watchers are essentially put on notice that they're going to be captured and put into Tartarus. They are going to be put into a different dimension. Remember, we live in a 10-dimensional world. They were evidently going to be put outside of these 10 dimensions or be bound somewhere where they could do no harm. Their request was to take their children with them. And the request was made to Enoch. And Enoch goes, okay, well, I'll go ask Yahweh. And Yahweh says, no. On the earth they were begotten, and on the earth they will stay. Now, it's interesting because Genesis, after the flood, Genesis, the 9th chapter, the 5th verse, Yahweh tells Moses that you can eat meat. He says, only you cannot eat the blood. Because within the blood there is the soul, and the soul I am asking back from every living creature that dies, the soul of man I will ask back when he dies. So our soul is, or I should say our body is a host to our soul. What is our soul? Our soul is our consciousness and our life force. I'll explain that a little bit further, a little bit more later on. But, you know, here we're dealing with these interdimensional life forms. And we've got a long history of alien interaction. Now, we go back to the book of Daniel. And Daniel's praying to Yahweh. He says, tell me the future of what's going to happen with our people. And nothing's going, he's not getting an answer. Finally, the angel Gabriel shows up and he says, hey, sorry I'm late, but I was fighting the Prince of Persia, and he would not let me pass. So I had to go back and get Michael, the foremost one, the Archangel Michael, the foremost one of your people, and bring him to fight the Prince of Persia so I could deliver the message. So he delivers the message. He tells him, no worry, they'll be repatriated back to the Holy Land. Everything will be cool. And so he says, well, I got to go and return to go fight the Prince of Persia. And he says, look, the Prince of Greece is coming. And so he goes back and guess he fights the Prince of Persia. Now, he's not actually fighting Xerxes. He's fighting a demonic, he's fighting one of the angels of Satan, if you want to classify it that. He is fighting one of the rebel force which are responsible for kidnapping this planet. What's their purpose? We'll cover that in a minute. So he has to go back to fighting that, and now there's another one coming. Now, if he is fighting interdimensional life forms as himself, and he's got to be pretty important because he's the only angel that's mentioned by name in a standard Bible. Some Bibles will mention the angel Raphael, but Gabriel is the only one that's mentioned. Not only is he mentioned once, he's mentioned twice. He's mentioned again in the Christian Greek scriptures at the announcement of Jesus' conception. So he must be fairly important, pretty powerful, interdimensional. Well, and he needed help fighting the Prince of Persia. So now, if there was a Prince of Persia that was directing that world power, we would have to, and there was a Prince of Greece that was directing that world power, then we would have to believe that there was probably a prince, a high-ranking interdimensional life form directing all the world powers, pitting the people against each other, kind of like what Greek mythology tells us Zeus does with the mortals here on Earth. Just pit them against each other and see what happens. And so it's like one big chess game. Egypt goes up against Assyria, loses. Assyria goes up against Babylon, loses. The Medes and Persians come up against Babylon, Babylon loses. The Persians go up against Greece, Greece loses. Greece goes against Rome. Well, Rome just basically overtakes Greece. There wasn't much of a battle there. They share the same gods almost, which is interesting because now you get the story of Diana and Lucifer, the twin god and goddesses. And from there, the next world power is what? From Rome, it goes to Britain and the United States. The sun never sets on British soil. You could almost still say that. The United States is still part of the colonies. Believe that? Spend 2 hours in London.
The sun never sets on Britannia's holdings, I believe is the quote.
You would know better than I. I thought I was independent for the last 200 years.
Well, maybe you misinterpreted the word independent as not being independence.
I've always been independent, regardless of what Her Majesty might think. I can cure her ills, too, with words, but that's besides the point.
What does majesty mean, and does the Queen actually qualify as being majestic?
Yes and no. In rank and title, which she does hold, even though she is illegitimate heir to the throne, but in rank and title, she does hold certain ranks of privilege, ranks of rulership. And she bears these with the support of the Vatican, regardless of what anyone believes. All roads lead to Rome, still do. When we pay our taxes here, it goes to the Queen. When the Queen takes 40%, passes the rest on to the Vatican. So we know where the control is coming from. That this is a whole. We may get time to get to this that segment. I'm going to try to wrap things up a little bit more quickly here, seeing as we're in the 21st century and not in the Bible. So by title, now in the scriptures, we're told, okay, listen, you're to obey the laws of the government until they go against the laws of God, because the governments are allowed to rule by God's permission, by Yahweh's permission. So we do, considering the way that society is, we do need to have rules and regulations for people to live by. Because if you remove the rules and regulations, what would you have? Mayhem. In today's world, sure you would have mayhem. you don't believe that, remove all the rules and regulations, hand everybody a gun, and then get on the Long Island Expressway. That's the road that goes from New York City out to Long Island, which is known as a moving parking lot. You know, sooner or later, those people are going to get angry enough at each other. And if they can shoot each other and get away with it, no repercussions, there's going to be a lot of bullet-ridden cars lining that road.
Well, conveniently, New York has gun bans except for the mafia and the police, who are incidentally working for the mafia.
Pretty much. So there you go. And it's a good thing, too. You know, the world, and not that I'm supporting gun bans, I'm supporting keeping guns out of the hands of criminals. I think that's a real good idea, but the problem is when you ban guns, the only ones who have guns are criminals. And
that's probably because the criminals pay off the criminals and government to take the guns off of law-abiding persons, so that's a hell of a lot easier to be a criminal because you don't have the risk of being shot when you're robbing people or raping them or destroying their lives.
Pretty much. And, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where criminals are at the highest level. The last pope was accused of
Don't you find that ironic, you know, how the lowest lowlifes get the highest positions and live the high life?
Well, do you know anything about Kevin Annett? Oh, Kevin Annett.
I had him on the show once. Yeah. I've been trying to get him back on about since the thing came out about the Pope and what have you. Been trying to get him back on, but I presume he's ridiculously busy.
Well, and they're probably looking to lock him up. I don't think they can kill him without really causing a problem, but they're looking at locking him up. But for treason, I think it is of all things. But regardless, he exposed the involvement of the Queen and the Anglican Church, along with the Pope and the Catholic Church, in child abuse and missing children. There's actually, I believe, it was 12 children taken from one of the indigenous tribes in Canada, from one of the First Nations, who were all made to kiss Elizabeth's feet. They loaded them on a van, took them away, and those kids were never seen again. And then you go into the religious schools that the Canadian Indigenous people have had to put up with, and what you find is that if the stories are true, kids were basically tortured to death, or just went missing. And now, what most people don't realize, every year. 500,000 kids go missing and are never found. Actually, about 750,000, about 750,000 are kidnapped every year. About 250,000 are recovered, but there's 500,000 which just vanish and they never find a trace. And when I say recovered, either dead or alive. But there's 500,000 that just vanish. Where do they go?
Oh, that's small fry by comparison to the entirety of the problem. There's an enormous pedophile ring running around. I think DynCorp even was busted human trafficking over 100,000 women and children. And I heard some insane figures, like 400,000 kids a year in the United States go missing, something like 100,000 in the UK. Yeah, it's big freaking business, okay? If you've got $1 billion, and you're a pedophile, the world's your oyster.
Pretty much. You can get whatever you want. You can get whatever you want, and the corruption is at the highest level. Now, we can go down a bunch of rat holes here, but for your listeners, if you want to find out, there's actually a religion that's involved here. It's the Vril Society. It comes out of Nazi Germany. Now, we talked about all this stuff that was imported through Operation Paperclip, along with the Vril Society. They were into sacrificing children. Look that up. And Loosh, LOOSH. Loosh is allegedly the captured soul of a sacrificed child, which is sold on the intergalactic black market. It's supposed to be the most strongest alien drug or drug available, and aliens or ETs are said to pay big money for it. Now, I don't know exactly how what kind of cash they come up with, but it's the most valuable drug in the universe. Loosh. Look it up. I was told if you go down that rat hole, they will come after you. And it, interestingly enough, it was the nephew of a current Knights Templar that told me that. Don't go down that rat hole because they will come after you. So I said, yeah, you know what? I know what's going on. I'll report it good enough. Do your own research. And moved on. Why store up a hornet's nest? It's there. You know, okay, what do you want to do? You want to go look inside and see where all the what all the buzz is about? You know, you just best off move on there. Go find a different subject to go look down. And the problem is that there's so many of these hornet's nests around the world, and people get fixated on them instead of saying, yep, they're all there. What does it all mean? And now when we go back and we look at what was going on before World War II, in order to get this picture, we actually have to go back to and have a little history lesson. It pretty much starts with around the War of 1812, interestingly enough. In 1811, the United States didn't renew the Rothschilds Charter for the First Bank of America. In 1812, we had ourselves a war. England didn't learn the first time, came back and invaded the United States. Why? Because Nathan Rothschild turned around and said, or Amshelmeyer Rothschild, one of them, said to the King of England. Now, they had, interestingly enough, that they were in the process. They were, at this time, they were financing both Wellington or the English army and Napoleon's army. And Napoleon's army was raging across Europe during this time. Now, the Rothschilds said, we'll finance it. You send the troops. So England sent the troops, and the war was on. He said, go recapture those colonies. We'll make them pay for it. They got their bank thrown out. Piggy bank was broken. Sorry, no more. The war ended in 1815, and in 1816, the Rothschilds had a charter bank, the Second Bank of America. Andrew Jackson, who had to fight the British during the War of 1812, threw the bank back out. And the bank didn't come back into America until 1913 when they blackmailed Woodrow Wilson and was reestablished as the Federal Reserve Bank of America. They are not part of the U.S. government. They are a privately held bank who the United States uses as their banker. And we owe them over close to $17 trillion now. So they ain't going to never see that bill being paid anyway.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, I think that's the public debt clock, which doesn't take into account derivatives trading.
You want to go to derivatives? Now we're talking, what is it, $220 trillion?
Oh, no. That's nothing. It's like,
no, that's just
it's
the U.S.
Fourth,
share.
It's like $4,000 trillion, like quadrillions kind of thing.
Oh, that's right. It is up. It is $4 quadrillion. It's $4 quadrillion. I had read an article about it about 3 months ago, and I'm like, how in the world do they get that much debt?
It's funny because I was just guessing four quadrillion because I heard $2 quadrillion about 5 years ago, I think, or it might have been about 2008. Sorry. When New Zealand's new Prime Minister got elected, who incidentally was on the board of the Federal Reserve in New York for 2 years as the head of the bond and derivatives trade for Europe. And so the derivatives market crashes in 2008, and then he gets elected to get us out of the crisis that he helped cause.
Hey, maybe he learned something. How to cause it again.
Yeah,
it was that maybe he could fix it. You see, so there's not so much irony, you know, in that as you might think. But
actually, you know what he figured out? He figured out that if you buy shares in all the companies that are going to make a hell of a lot of money for all the debt that you create and put them in a blind trust, you can be the prime minister of a country, dictate its policy, and make a hell of a lot of money without people knowing about it.
Yeah, just by holding the debt. And you know, it turns into basically the ultimate high stakes poker game, where they're now you know, it's like two. Remember when you were? I don't know. I remember doing this when I was a kid. I'll bet you a dollar. I'll bet you $100. I'll bet you $1,000. I'll bet you $250,000,000. I'll bet you a zillion, bazillion, quadrillion, as high as you can count dollars. Yeah, and it's going on in reality. Yeah, I don't know. Did you ever do that when you were a kid? You get into a betting contest with one of your friends just to see who can bet the most imaginary money?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's exactly what's going on in the world right now. It's a bunch of grown-up kids betting with a bunch of imaginary money, all based on debt, to the point where they own the world so many times over that if the system collapses, no way that they could ever get paid back.
You know, this reminds me of an argument Homer Simpson had with Mr. Flanders. Afraid not times infinity. Afraid so times infinity plus one. Don't!
You know, it's like, where do you want to take it? Where do you want to take it?
Well, we're just making stuff up, you know. I mean, in fact, that's kind of become
we're simplifying the obvious, which is so complicated that the government can't regulate it. And when you listen
it's
to
not
any
true.
Of the analysts,
the government can regulate anything that's complicated just by messing it up.
Well, you see. When you get, from what I understand, now I'm not an expert in the equities market. I mean, in the equities market, and you know, I'm not a banker. Sorry, scientist, researcher, biblical historian, exopolitical ambassador to Earth, but can't tell you a whole lot about money. I can tell you that I don't have a whole lot of it, but that's besides the point. But they've created this debt system, which is all based on artificial money, which is just numbers in somebody's computer. I mean, you're talking at a level, and the analysts that look at this say that you're better off taking the money that they have invested in this system and going to Las Vegas and betting it on a blackjack table. Think about it.
Well,
you would have a better return at a legal gambling establishment.
Incidentally, when the Glass-Steagall Act was implemented, it was after the 1920 stock market crash, which caused the Great Depression. And that great stock market crash was caused by derivatives trading. You put $1 down and you get $10 worth of stock, kind of thing, as the saying goes. So Glass-Steagall was put in to prevent that kind of nonsense. And then in 1996, incidentally, when the Prime Minister of New Zealand was on the board of the Federal Reserve, they repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. And then the New York State Gaming Commission came to Wall Street and says, hey guys, you know, we actually have to start regulating you because what you're doing is gambling.
Yeah.
And the bankers kicked them out as well and just said, no, it's not gambling. It's not gambling. We're only gambling. We're only calling $1, $40 and gambling it on the stock market at 1,000 to 1. It's not gambling. It's not gambling at all. I mean, all we're doing is creating more money than exists on the entire planet out of thin air and then causing a giant financial black hole for the entire world to get sucked into. What's wrong with that?
The odds on winning this are 1,000,000,000 to 1. Ooh, I like those odds. I'll take it. Oh, you lose.
No, but the best thing is they gamble with other people's money. So even if they lose, they don't lose anything and get a golden parachute as well.
And everybody's standing around on a rat wheel, running in a race in place, doing the same thing every day of their lives, thinking they're going to have a different result. And then you wonder why insanity has reached the level it has on this planet and why the pharmaceuticals have to pump out so many psychotropic drugs in order to keep everybody's brain from exploding out of their head and dribbling down out their ears.
Incidentally, I just heard, what was it, yesterday or the day before, you know how you got all those ads on TV in the States advertising, are you not feeling very well? Are you really nervous around speaking in front of a crowd? You know, like normal stuff that everybody's supposed to feel from time to time and what have you. It's called being human! And I say, well, that's not natural. And now we've got this completely unnatural drug to treat your natural condition. And by the way, it's got this side effect that might kill you and give you intestinal bowel cancer and turn you into a homicidal maniac who would also kill your family and then commit suicide. Now, that last bit where they tell you all the side effects and everything like that, apparently it was confusing consumers. So the FDA says, you know, let's just leave that part out of the ads, you know. Because it's just messing up the process.
You know, I since they first came out, I hated pharmaceutical ads. Now you're telling me what I need to go tell my doctor what I should take for this symptom that I've got, and you're also telling me that it may cause death in extreme cases. What are you, nuts?
Actually, suicide is now the leading cause of death in America. Incidentally, all the people who've, I wouldn't say all of them, but a large proportion of the people committing suicide in America are on pharmaceutical drugs that have on the printout sheet, warning, may cause murder-suicide.
You know, and that's the most ridiculous thing. It's like, come on. They've created a life for the inhabitants, for the masses, in which they need to be drugged now in order to carry it out. And those that break down, either abuse the prescription drugs or get on illegal drugs because their lives have become were such tragic events that they can no longer psychologically handle the process. And so they got to kill pain. How much pain does your life have to be in to be a heroin addict? I don't know. And you see, here's the thing. The more pain you can create, the more the demand. And who controls the heroin trade? Well, let's see.
The CIA.
80% of the world's heroin comes out of Afghanistan.
It's actually 97% now. It used to be 1% before the U.S. Came in, and their heroin production went up 3,000% in the first 3 months.
Well, here's the thing. If you really want to know what caused the events of 9/11 here in the United States, go look up opium production in Afghanistan and then go to Google Images and you'll see a bar chart. And it's a nice little progressive bar chart that continues to rise, except when the Taliban come to power in 2001, there's no bar there. It's a little nub on the bottom of the baseline. And so they basically wiped out opium production in Afghanistan in 2001. There was no opium to be had. And so the next thing that happens is we have truckloads of methamphetamine coming across the Mexican border and all sorts of other designer drugs coming in to satisfy the need. All I can say is that the CIA has been involved in supporting the effort in Afghanistan since the time that Russia was in there.
My one of my listeners is in the New Zealand Defence Force, and he came back from Afghanistan, and he told us the story. He was there's these big shipping containers, right? And they're outside the military bases, and there's all these CIA people running around all over the place in Afghanistan. You know, they're all wearing their white shirts and their dark sunglasses and what have you. You know, attempting to look incognito, but because everybody else has like 6 or 7 teeth and wearing a turban or a burqa or something of that nature, they don't exactly fit in very well, and so they're quite obvious to see. And so one of them comes up to him and he says, "You and the Australian soldier there, go and guard that container." And they go, "What's in it?" And they go, "None of your frickin' business. Just guard the container and don't look inside it." So naturally, they looked inside it, and it was pallets and pallets stacked upon each other of opium poppies, dried and ready for shipping.
There you go.
And that's why that's why the troops are being photographed by the BBC and CNN and goodness knows who else, guarding the poppy fields, because that's what they're there to do. It's, I mean, if you've seen the movie Avatar, You know, they send a whole bunch of military and a whole bunch of corporate scum to a planet to mine this particular resource, and to hell with the people and all of that kind of stuff. We're just gonna go in, plow it out, and then extract all the stuff that we want. It's not entirely dissimilar from what's happening in Afghanistan, except the resource that they're mining is frickin' heroin. You know why? Drugs are a really good source of funding for black ops. Cash.
Operation, yeah. Absolutely.
Cash, baby. You can't frickin' trace that.
And how important is the trade? Well, if you do your historic homework and you research the Opium Wars, something fairly well documented, you'll find that the cities of Shanghai and Hong Kong were about 90% opium addicted, and the Emperor of China said no more, and he closed the ports to English trading. And His Majesty's Royal Navy came up, blew down the blockade, sunk the blockade, opened up the ports, and started shipping opium back in. Now, it is said that Queen Victoria made a third of her income via the opium trade. And in fact, some of the most powerful families on the face of the planet have made their fortune on the opium trade. Now, I do want to go back and touch one thing here, because it is important in the overall scheme of things, before I change the subject completely and we move on to a different paradigm. We talked about the Nazi Operation Paperclip and the fact that they brought over tens of thousands of people, including their security force heads and essentially their whole way of doing business. But when we go back before the First World War, actually, we started back with Napoleon, didn't we? Yeah, let's go back to Napoleon. The First Congress of the First Congress of Vienna. Napoleon's War was still on during the First Congress of Vienna, but it was coming to close to an end. The Congress of Vienna met in 1814 and 1815, and the purpose was to redesign Europe, redraw borders to see who owned what. And at the at this Congress, the Rothschild family to turn around and go pushed a one world government to unite all of the European monarchies and countries and form essentially a European Union. And by the very fact of colonization, it would control the world. However, Napoleon didn't defeat Tsar Alexander I of Russia, and nor did the Russian fortunes fall into the hands of the Rothschilds. By the end of the Napoleonic Wars, the Rothschilds had control of the Bank of Germany, the Bank of France, and the Bank of England. So, you know, there's a lot of leverage there. When you control someone's money, you can control their vote. So, but the Tsar said, hey, I don't want to be any part of your club. You don't control me. I'm going back to Russia. I believe it was Nathan Meyer Rothschild which said, my descendants will see your descendants wiped off the face of the earth. And so we saw that during the Bolshevik Revolution, a little bit but more than 100 years later. But what did happen exactly 100 years later was World War One. Now, World War One was a turning point in history. It's different than any other war prior. It was a mechanized war. It was the first war to use chemical warfare. And it was the first time that the world itself was involved in war, not just regions or countries, the entire world through colonization. And the war, interestingly enough, during World War One, Japan attacked Russia in the east. Germany attacked it in the west. And so Russia had a two-front war. So it was easy for the Bolshevik Revolution to come in and take control of Russia. Now, the Bolshevik Revolution was, guess who financed that? The Oppenheimers and the Rothschilds. So they essentially, the Tsar of Russia had somewhere around $60 million invested in their banks. They basically had the Tsar killed with his own money. So, you know, Nicholas and his family were wiped out, wiped off the face of the earth. So the Rothschilds got their way there. Now, what happens at the end of World War One is the League of Nations is established. The only problem is, even though Woodrow Wilson writes the charter for the League of Nations, Congress refuses to ratify it and join the League of Nations. It's viewed as a European club. Okay. So the plot thickens a little bit. 1933 rolls around, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt comes to power. The same year, Adolf Hitler comes to power. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt, one of his first acts is a presidential proclamation which makes it illegal for gold to be used as a legal tender. You can no longer pay a debt by using gold, and Americans are only allowed to own $100 in gold coin. Now, remember, this is the United States was plunged into the Great Depression at this time, which started in 1929. And so here we are in 1933, and Roosevelt comes out with his New Deal program, gets elected president. The first thing he does is take everybody's gold. $380 billion worth of gold was bought at $20.67 a troy ounce. A year later, FDR makes another presidential proclamation, changes the strike price of gold to $35 an ounce. They have a profit of 40% on their investment, and the United States dollar just devalued by 40%. Nice. Very nice. So,
and they allegedly put all that gold in Fort Knox, but I think a couple of years back, Congressman Ron Paul said, hey, can I go look at that Fort Knox and see everybody's gold in there? Yeah, no. But I'm a congressman. No. Why not? Oh, because there's no freaking gold in there. Is there?
Yeah, probably not.
Stole everybody's gold and gave it to somebody else. Just gave it to them.
You know, that's what they didn't give it to somebody else. They took it and they kept it for themselves. It's just that simple. It's going on right now with Germany. Germany wants their gold back. And the answer's no.
I want my gold back.
Yeah, well, fill out this paperwork. And it's a 7-year process to get your gold back. You'll have it back in 7 years. Start yeah. Right.
You know what? The Germans probably swallowed it and walked out and, you know, been chased by the guards. Don't make me run. I am full of bullion.
Well, you know, when we go back and we look at what's happening here, okay, the United States gets their gold fleece, but, you know, hey, Americans start going back to work. They start building hydroelectric dams, both in the East and the West. We're being geared up for war is what's going on. They took the gold to finance the Second World War. For what purpose? There's something going on behind the scenes here. You see,
It might have had something to do with setting up the United Nations, which John D. Rockefeller donated the land to build the building on, and they put like a Nazi war criminal as like the first Secretary General or something like that. And it's involved right around the world with human trafficking and depopulation and toxification of everybody and giving people off vaccines and things like that, purposely sterilizing people in the Philippines and all over the place.
Close. You see, we have to go back to 1897 to get the answer, and that's when the first Congress of Zion is formed or meets. Now, actually, they were supposed to meet in Munich, Germany, but when word got out that the prime reason for their meeting was to repatriate Jews to the, quote, homeland or Palestine or the Holy Land, the local Hasidic population or Orthodox Jewish population put up such a protest that they had to move the Congress location, the meeting of the Congress, to Basel. I believe it was either Bern or Basel, Switzerland. And so that's where they laid out the plan for the next 100 years, or the taking over the world as a one-world government. Now, there was something that came out of that, a publication which was put out in 1903. It's called The Plagiarized Hoax. It's the Protocol of the Learned Elders of Zion. And when I read that, it was like the smoking gun to Revelation to me. I was like, aha, now I understand it all. Before that, I couldn't make any sense of this system. Read the protocol and you learn it. Or better yet, read Letters to Earth. You can survive Armageddon because the answers are there, where we came from, why we're here, why things are this messed up, and what our future is. And that's what I want to talk about next. You see, this was all a design. Now, interesting thing that happens in 1897, a UFO crashes in Aurora, Texas. After World War II is over, guess what? The United States joins the United Nations willingly. We're right there, right on the front lines now, aren't we? And what happens? In 1947, the United Nations declares that Palestine should be a homeland. Now, the end of World War One. Interestingly enough, at the beginning of World War One, Palestine was controlled by the Ottoman Empire. By the end of World War Two, by the end of World War One, it was controlled by the English Empire. And so came the Balfour Agreement that Palestine should be used as a homeland for the Jews, which was written to the Rothschilds. Nice. So here there's a lot of world support to get the homeland for the Jews back. And in 1947, the first serious thing that the United Nations does is declare Israel the homeland for the Jews, and Israel becomes a state. Also in 1947, a UFO crashes at Roswell, New Mexico. So what is it with UFOs, the Bible, Israel, all this stuff that's going on? You go back, and I now want to get on the positive timeline. It was a extraterrestrial, most likely an interdimensional, which told a young Jewish woman 2,000 years ago, a little more than 2,000 years ago, that she was pregnant with the Son of God and that this child had perfect human DNA. Now, I could sit here and tell you about all the different things that Jesus did, but the most important thing that he did was this. When standing before Pontius Pilate and asked if he was king, he said no. Well, he didn't say no. He said, "My kingdom is not of this world." Really? You see, what it doesn't go into is where was your kingdom? He told his disciples that he was leaving to secure a kingdom and that he would be back. He never said anything about starting a religion. It was all about government. And so after he told what his intention was, they took him out and they killed him. And the body of Christ, or this man Yeshua or Jesus, became a sacrifice and a blood sacrifice at that. And it was a claim laid to the earth, a legal claim of ownership. Now, there's reports that, oh, Jesus didn't die because a lot of people saw him afterward. That's well, the human body died. But now we're talking about an interdimensional, a very powerful interdimensional.
I spoke before about Jonathan Gray when we were talking about the Noah's Ark that he found. Well, he also spent a bit of time in Israel and went to Jesus' tomb. And Jesus' tomb was had a wheel, like a giant stone wheel that gets rolled into place along this little channel, and that seals the tomb up. And then there's an iron bolt which is popped into one side. Now, even without the iron bolt to stop the thing from moving, you still need like maybe four or five men pushing with all their might in order to get this big stone wheel to turn and to get out of the way to open up the tomb. And apparently, 3 days after the crucifixion, that tomb door was flown open with such force that it actually snapped the iron bolt in half and threw the stone wheel right out of the doorway. and this is like, whoa! How did somebody muster up the strength to do that? Can't have been just a normal human, I don't think. All right, well, anyway, we've got one more hour to go, so let's take our quick break, and we will get back and talk about more of this. We actually want to get into your book, indeed, because that's kind of like a modern-day equivalent of Revelations, I guess. We'll see about that. We'll see you back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.
Right here. It's paradise, so close, face to face, side by side, every breath we take together, I don't ever wanna stop moving with you.
Ooh, baby, I love your way, every day, yeah, yeah. Every day.
Welcome back to hour number three of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulously Fukushima irradiated hole in the ozone layer paradise, where all you need to do to soak up the rays is walk outside. And my very special guest is still Peter Kling, who's quite fabulous in the interesting stuff that he's talking about. Peter, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Vinny. You know, here we are in a very interesting time. And before I get into the book, I want to point one thing out. We talked about the Rothschilds' efforts to form a one-world government in 1814. The same effort came about in 1914. We got a First World War. League of Nations afterward. The United States wouldn't join. We got a Second World War. The United States joined. Israel becomes a country. Here it is, 2014. A very interesting changing time of history. I say changing time of history because we're going to face some changes. We're going to face some very interesting changes. The world changed when Napoleon ran rampant through the world. The world changed more so in 1914 because we moved to mechanized and chemical warfare. And here we are in 2014. And we're facing something that's really interesting. It's the prophecy of the blood moons. There's six prophecies talking about this event happening. The prophecy basically says this: the sun will be darkened and the moon will be turned to blood before the great and illustrious day of Yahweh arrives, that day being the Battle of Armageddon. Now, most people think about the Battle of Armageddon as being the end of the world. Wrong. It's the end of the world system, the end of the coming New World Order. So you can't do away with the New World Order until you have the New World Order that you can do away with it. When you actually look at the contents of the Bible, and this is what I break down in my book. My book, I cover where do we come from? What's the most likely explanation? Well, we go back to the Bible and it says we were genetically engineered and that we have the soul of God. The very soul of God is breathed into our nostrils and we are given that energy and a consciousness. We are alive. We are awake. Well, most of us are. If you're listening to this show, you probably are. So we have this within us. There's more that's going on here. There's the old Egyptian saying, as above, so below. And so we are looking at the world events today, and we see that, boy, there's so many hot spots around the world. It seems like we're on the brink of destruction any minute. And the biggest problem that we're actually facing is financial collapse. The dollar is still the world's currency, and it's on the verge of collapsing. And all currencies are on the verge of collapsing, or most anyway. The Pope came out last May, said that the debt system, which has become an enslaving or a way to enslave the masses, must be changed. He was calling for change in the world banking system because it has become the system that we have is a debt system and a system of enslaving the masses. In the beginning of July, he came out and he said that they were going to enforce, in an apostolic letter, they were going to enforce papal law. I'm like, what is papal law? Not too many people understand papal law. I don't. But the gist of the letter is that you needed to follow the rules of the Vatican, and if you didn't follow the rules of the Vatican, they were going to turn around and prosecute you to the fullest extent of papal law or of Vatican law. Now, you might say, oh, so what? The church is going to go police itself? Well, yes, indeed. And the first thing it did was to declare an open policy to the Vatican Bank, where you can go in and inspect their books anytime and make sure that there's no corruption going on. And at the same time, a very high-ranking bishop who was in charge of part of the Vatican Bank was arrested for fraud, for money laundering. So they're doing their own housekeeping. time to clean house. Since then, more and more people have been arrested for money laundering and fraud from the Vatican Bank. You don't hear about it, but go look it up online. You can find it if you look hard enough. In September, the Pope comes out and he says that the current currency system has to change and they can no longer use "In God We Trust" on currency because they worship money and not God, and they can no longer declare "In God They Trust" because they have made money their object of worship and they have used it as a debt enslavement. Now, here's an interesting thing. You got a Vatican, you got a Pope who's a Jesuit. And the Jesuits control a considerable portion of the banking system of the world. The other side of the banking system is the Zionist house of the banking system, controlled by the Zionists. The Rothschilds, Oppenheimers, go to all the big banking houses. They've been around for since the Knights Templar. And we're going to tie the Knights Templar in here in just a minute. But since the time of the Knights Templar, and pretty much everyone will tell you that that's where we got our modern-day banking system from, was the system that was developed by the Knights Templar so pilgrims can go safely to the Holy Land and visit the Holy Land. So we have this change being called for by the Vatican. Now, on October 3rd, this Jesuit Pope gives an edict, a 41-page edict, on changing the world financial system. Interesting. The Pope has spoken. Now, what makes this so interesting is the fact that the Church, the Holy See, is the mother of all corporations. Hence, all corporations answer to whom? The mother. And you ask yourself, well, why are all religious entities corporations? Because they are all offspring of the mother corporation. So the banking corporations, the businessmen of the world, all corporations come under the auspices of the rules of the Church. How about that?
Well, what was the most powerful entity in the world for a long period of time? The Church. Now, what massive powerful entities that still exist today gave up all of their power, you know?
Yeah, seriously. What do you think people say? Oh, I don't want this. How many?
I'm really getting sick of going around with impunity, not having to have any responsibility, having all the health in the world, and being able to do absolutely anything I want without any freaking consequences or whatever. You know, I'm just a bad person. I'm going to give up all of that ruthless freaking control and power. I mean, are people retarded? And the answer is, yes.
Off with their heads. You know, yeah, you look at this and it's like, seriously? Seriously? And that's where they're leading us down this path.
Yeah, as my former producer would say, it's out of control.
Now, here's something that's going to happen this year. And it's funny, I came across this 4 years ago, well, 3.5 years ago. Came across this in October of 2010. On my Facebook page, I had a lot of New Age people that were all excited because 10-10-10 was coming. So through the month of September, I watched posts about 10-10-10 coming. And then in October, there were more posts about 10-10-10 and the synchronicity of the numbers and how it was enlightenment. And, you know, I have to say they were right, because I had a moment of enlightenment in my being irritated and to the point of being pissed off about all these 10-10-10, 11-11-11 comments that I was seeing coming across my page.
On 10-10-10, I had a profound realization that all the people running about 10-10-10 were freaking retarded.
Well, you know, maybe they weren't so retarded after all, because this is what I wrote. I wrote, I understand 10, 10, 10. I understand 11, 11, 11. He said, I even understand 12, 12, 12. I said, but what we need to be careful of is 3, 13, 13, and 4, 14, 14. And the only reason I said it is because it's, in my mind, it was the next synchronous numbers to come about. But I said, why did I say that? I thought, I have no idea. Google 3, 13, 13. March 13, 13. Nothing, 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 nothing. Okay. What about April 14th? April 14, 2014. Ooh. Isn't this interesting? April 14th and Nisan 14, the first, or actually it's Nisan is the first Hebrew month of the Hebrew calendar. And the 14th day of Nisan is Passover. When was the first Passover? Oh, somewhere around 3,500, 3,600 years ago in Egypt, when the nation of Israel was being kept captive and wouldn't, and they wanted their freedom, and it took 10 plagues to get them released. 10 plagues. Now, that's interesting, because the 10 plagues were plagues against the gods of Egypt. And who was bringing these plagues? Moses said it was Yahweh, and Pharaoh said, who is this Yahweh that I should listen to his voice? And so Moses throws down his stick, and it turns into a serpent. And Pharaoh calls his wise men and his magic-practicing priests, and they come in, and they throw down their staffs, and their staffs become serpents too. And then Moses' staff, now serpent, starts eating all the other serpents. And then the first of the plagues come about, and all the waters in Egypt are turned to blood. Interesting. A series of events come about after this, all quite strange. Fish die, frogs, insect swarms, locusts, hail that burns? Where'd that come from? You mean like methane anhydrate, which is found naturally under the sea, which could have been blown out by some sort of volcanic eruption, perhaps? Yeah, could be. We saw lots of things, but why did these things happen? What was causing the earth to be this upset? The ninth plague, Moses raises his arms. He's told, Yahweh says, raise your arms, command the sun to be darkened. And so Moses does that, and instantly the sun becomes darkened and a gloom sets over Egypt. It's the tenth plague. I'm sorry, the ninth plague. The 10th plague is really called on by Pharaoh himself, where he's ready to go kill the Israelites for causing all these problems. And the 10th plague, the Jews are told, or they're not Jews actually at this time, the Israelites are told to slaughter a lamb, paint their doorway with the lamb's blood, roast the lamb, and get ready to leave. And that night, the angel of death rides through Egypt, killing every firstborn. The next day, Pharaoh releases the Israelites, and they leave Egypt. Now, the story continues where they get into the Holy Land, and we might touch on that in a minute. That'll be in retrospect. So here we are, 2014. We see synchronicity between 1814 and 1914, unsettled, world wars going on. What can we expect in 2014? Economic collapse? When economic collapse happens, when they collapse the dollar, what will that do to society? It's not going to just affect the world, the United States. It's going to affect the world. Who's ever holding dollars? They can then put them in the loo and use them as tissue to wipe their bum. Think about it. That's what they'll be worth. But they have to replace it. They have to put something back into place. Now, here's the interesting thing. Years ago, I met a man, elderly man. He was from Berlin. And in our conversation, he told me that he was worth $6,800,000,000 Deutschmarks. And it wasn't worth the paper it was printed on. billionaires getting wiped out. That's an interesting financial collapse. Billionaires getting wiped out. All those wonderful people have been busting their ass for year after year after year after year and have saved up nice nest eggs and have nice big 401k plans that they plan on retiring on. You better cash that in and buy all the food and gold you can. Well, actually, I wouldn't recommend buying gold that much, but buy silver. You can at least trade silver, but food is more important, food and water. Being prepared. Being prepared for an economic collapse, because the chances are you are going to lose everything that you've worked so hard for to save up. If you had $100,000 saved up in the bank or $100 million saved up in the bank and they're Federal Reserve notes and the Federal Reserve note is worthless, then you own a million worthless Federal Reserve notes. Like I said, pile them up, put them in the loo. And that's what one of the realities that we're facing. But here's the other thing. On April 14th, or Nisan 14, Passover starts at sundown on the 14th of April, and it ends on sundown on the 15th of April, which, interestingly enough, here in the United States, is the 15th of April is known as Tax Day. And at the 15th of April, that night is the first of four blood moons, four full lunar eclipses, which happen all on Hebrew holidays over the next 18 months. Two on Passover, two on the Festival of Booths. There's a couple of other, Sukkoth, I believe is the name of it, S-O-K-K-T-H. UTH, I'm not Jewish, I forget the name, but it's the ancient, or it's the biblical festival of booths, and this was a harvest festival. This was a time when they were out in the fields gathering the crops for the year. And so the moonlight that they would have depended on to help with those, you know, those late harvest moons that, well, I don't know what you get down under, but we get usually in the beginning of October or the end of September. We get a huge, big harvest moon. It's like the moon seems twice as big as what it normally is, and it's really full and bright. Well, this year and next year, they're going to be eclipsed. Now, if you were a nation that ran on a lunar calendar and your highest holy holidays, which depended on the full moon, were being eclipsed, what would that tell you? But not only that, there are also two solar eclipses, both on the spring equinox, which is the first day of the Hebrew calendar, 2015, 2016. The last lunar eclipse happens September 28th, 2015. Interestingly enough, September 29th is the most accepted historical date for the birth of Christ. Everybody's saying, oh, what about December 25th? I thought that was his birthday. No. December 25th is the birth of the sun, S-U-N, not S-O-N. It was transfigured by the Holy Roman Empire, which became the Holy Roman Catholic Church, as a celebration for the holiday of Saturnalia. Mm. It was tied into sun worship. Now, Saturn is...
Allegedly, I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off. Finish your point. I'm sorry.
Okay. Saturn is also known as the star of the god Raphan, the star of the god Raphan. Now, there's a very interesting scripture in Acts. It's the most avoided scripture in the Bible, I think. But it's in Acts, the 7th chapter, the 42nd and the 43rd verse. I got a little homework for everybody to do here in a second. The disciple Stephen is standing before the Jewish high court. This is in the first century after the death of Jesus. And this is the ruling class of Judea that Stephen was standing before. And he quotes the prophet Amos, and he says, and Amos is speaking in the first person of Yahweh, the God of Israel. And Yahweh says, "Was it to me to whom you worshiped those 40 years in the wilderness, O Israel? No, it was to the tent of Molech and to the star of the god Raphan, to whom you made images and sacrificed to. And for that, I will send you far beyond Babylon. Now, in around the year 600 BC, the Babylonians came and destroyed Solomon's temple and hauled the survivors off to Babylon. In 70, the Roman governor, or the Roman general, soon to become emperor, Titus, came in and wiped out Jerusalem and took about, killed about 2 million Jews and took about 97,000 captive back to Rome. Now, look up the star of Molech, or the star of the god Raphan. Molech is actually, the first Molech was the Egyptian god Set, S-E-T, who was a bisexual or homosexual god who required live child sacrifice.
And incidentally, they started up the search for extraterrestrial intelligence called Set-E.
How about that?
Yeah, I love that. And I heard a while ago that they did a star chart analysis or something like that. You know, there's a references in the Bible or something about the position of the stars the night Jesus was born, and a couple of scientists, astrologers or something, were like, "Well, that sounds really interesting. Let's have a look at our current star system and how everything's currently positioned now, and then let's roll the clock back until it hits the exact same position when Jesus was born." And it turned out it was like on September 11th or something.
Yeah, and there's also an interesting thing about, just a side note here, the Great Pyramid of Giza. We talked about the Sphinx not being Egyptian. I doubt that the Great Pyramid of Giza is Egyptian. And if anybody does research on what has been found out about the Great Pyramid of Giza, you don't find an Egyptian story. You find a Judeo-Christian story.
Mm. And well, this apparently Christianity is the oldest religion on earth.
Well, I wouldn't exactly say that, but... well, you see, all religion gets tracked back to the Anunnaki in Sumeria. Before that, humans were children of God. We were children of Yahweh. You go back and you look at the first account. And we're going to talk about this in a minute because it has to do with our future. It has a lot to do with our future. Let's stay a little bit more on subject here. Here we are dealing with these issues where we have, I mentioned the Star of Molech. Go to Google Images and search Star of Molech and then think where you have seen a six-sided star with 6 points and 6 pyramids on it. Oh, did I just say 666? Yeah, I did. Think about that. The mark of the beast. And what was the image of Molech? It was known better by the Canaanite as a Canaanite god, the Canaanite god Baal. And the image for Baal is a bull's head with a man's body sitting on a throne. And what they would do is the throne was actually a giant furnace, and they would build a fire in there, and they would throw live babies into the burning furnace. And that was Molech worship.
Sounds tasty. And incidentally, what do they do when they get all the wealthy and powerful and politically well-connected people in the world every single year at Bohemian Grove? Well, they burn a baby in effigy under a giant stone owl called Molech.
Yeah.
I don't think the religion's changed that much in a couple of thousand years, do you?
Not at all. Not at all. But you see, when you go back and
may I interject, though? Because despite the fact that they're currently, even openly, kind of doing it, burning the bodies in effigy, of course we would never known about that if somebody hadn't infiltrated and shot the footage and what have you. But I can guarantee, or at least I'm highly suspicious, that they do real sacrifices as well, outside of everybody's view.
Anything goes at Bohemian Grove. And what happens at Bohemian Grove stays at Bohemian Grove. And here you have the world's most powerful maniacal rulers all coming together to party. You know, it's interesting. I just want to make a reference real quick to Prince William. When he was touring after his marriage, when him and Kate went on tour of the world to look at their future subjects, he was last seen just before the party at Bohemian Grove started. And he was supposed to be going back to London. But nobody ever saw him come back to London. You would think that there'd be fanfare and all sorts of pictures of the prince coming back to London with his new bride. Not a photograph. Makes you wonder where they went. But Bohemian Grove is starting and they were going back to London. That's the official word. And their press secretary said that they wanted to be alone in their private estate from the media.
Oh, yeah. That makes a whole lot of sense. Hey, and also, I think back in, what was it? Might have been 2010, I think. The Prime Minister, John Key of New Zealand, he was called to the States. They were having some big problem with their quantitative easing or something like that. And who can help you with a hell of a lot of big problems with quantitative easing? Oh, that's right, the guy who invents derivatives trading, of course. And so he visits the United States at the exact same time when Bohemian Grove is going on, and even mainstream media reported that he's going to Northern California, just north of San Francisco. Where's Bohemian Grove located?
Yeah, it's about the right location.
Uh-huh.
so, have fun. Just don't ruin my life.
See, that's the thing. I do actually want to ambush the Prime Minister and ask him. And he won't admit it. Probably not. But I'll watch his frickin' eyes. When those eyes start darting all over the place like a captured animal. Gotcha. Frickin' scumbag. You were there. You were killing babies, weren't you?
Let me ask you, Prime Minister, did you find it difficult to sit down during your stay at Bohemian Grove?
He's like, no. It was actually quite easy because I had small boys to sit on my lap.
Oh, my goodness.
Did I just say that on the radio? Actually, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, allegedly, okay? Let me preface and surmise everything that I just said with the word allegedly.
Hypothetically.
Yeah. Even better.
Hypothetically.
Because I think they're somewhat hypo. Because I think these old guys who go out there with the young boys and the porn stars and all of that kind of stuff, they are a bit hypo and somewhat pathetic, hence hypothetically.
There you go. The truth reveals itself once again. And truer words are always said in jest, and we seem to be having a good time laughing about this. So take it from where it comes. But
actually have a strong constitution to be able to think about child murder and rape and sacrifice and be able to laugh about it without it destroying your freaking soul, right?
Especially if you have children.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but what choice do we have, ladies and gentlemen? It's going on, isn't it? It's going on. Are we gonna save all of these kids? No, we're freaking not, are we? They're dying right now. Thousands of them. At this very moment, are probably being tortured and raped by the elite, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Because they vanish. They disappear. We just had a little girl killed in the United States here yesterday. They saw the person who... Now, this wasn't done by an elite. This was just done by some maniacal maniac who liked to murder little girls.
Well, that's probably why you heard about it. In fact...
You don't hear about that. You don't hear about things at the top level.
Yeah.
Not unless somebody at the top level is spilling the beans.
Yeah.
You know, decides to say, okay, I had enough of this nonsense, like George Green.
Yeah.
If you go look for a video about George Green, he'll tell you that he was sitting in Aspen, Colorado, I believe it was the Prime Minister of France and Teddy Kennedy, and there was a lot of cocaine there. And when George's 14-year-old daughter walked in the room, George said that Teddy Kennedy said, I'd like to do that. And George looked at him and said, no, you wouldn't. And Kennedy said, why not? He said, well, that's my daughter. Kennedy said, so? I would have punched Kennedy right in the mouth and then kicked his ass across the room, out the door, down the hallway, down the stairs, and out into the street. And then said, that's for Chappaqua. Oh, Chappaquiddick, sorry. That's for Chappaquiddick. Now, you want to talk about my daughter?
Sorry. What's Chappaquiddick? Is it like a relative to the Chupacabra?
No, Chappaquiddick, years ago, in the 60s, Senator Ted Kennedy drove off of a bridge and into the Chappaquiddick River where his secretary drowned to death. It's believed that she may have been pregnant.
I got you.
Mary Jo, I believe, was her name. Mary, I can't remember her last name. Starts with, it's got a hard-sounding C name, if I recall correctly, but it's been a long time since I brought up Chappaquiddick. I mean, here's a man that's one of the most respected politicians and somebody who he respects enough to keep leisure company with, someone that I would think would be a friend. He wants to have sex with his underage 14-year-old daughter. What are you, nuts? Yeah, those are the people that are ruling this system.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, where does that leave us? Where does that leave us? We brought up so many issues that we're facing, everything from alien invasion to child sacrifice. Where does that leave us? We've got Fukushima exterminating the planet and the 45 agenda, the 2045 initiative to make sure that all biological humans are dead.
Mm.
Where does that leave us? Where did the technology come from? Why is this the most critical time in history? You see, all of these letters to Earth. I never intended to write a book. Never intended to write a book. I needed to know the scientific answers for myself. And I came across what started this all as I read Job, the 38th chapter, and I get down to the part where Yahweh is talking to Job, and he says, "Have you seen my storehouses of snow, which I have saved for the day of distress and war?" And I'm thinking, storehouses of snow? Job? Middle East? What would Job know of snow? Now, I had learned to meditate, So I started meditating. I went to a meditative level, and I put myself – I went into deep meditation. I actually went into the theta level of the mind where your brain slows down nice and slow, and you can do remote viewing. And so I went back, and I looked through the eyes of Job, and what I saw were the mountaintops around where I lived and how they were covered in snow. And I said, that's no storehouse of snow. And so I started kind of like – what I would call playing Google Earth, where you start, you know, coming away from looking at your feet to now looking at the planet from space. And I realized that the storehouses are at the poles. Oh, how stupid. That's how obvious. Hidden in plain sight, the storehouses are at the poles. How do you use snow? What are the properties? Well, you can either melt it or you can make more of it. I thought, well, if you made more of it, might cause another ice age. But if you melted it, that would really impact the world a lot because 80% of the population of the planet lives within 90 miles of the coast. That's why they came out with SALT II treaties to keep short-range nuclear missiles because they can pull a submarine up to somebody's coast and they can kill 80% of the population of that country because they live within 90 miles of the coast. They don't need long-range ballistic missiles. Got stealth submarines. Pull up, wipe you out. So, you know,
New Zealand also holds a very strategically significant position in the South Pacific because there's what's called Submarine Alley. There's this giant trench that runs from I think the California coastline all the way down to New Zealand, and apparently when stealth subs launch their missiles, they then jump down into that trench so they can't be detected or have retaliation against them, and then they hightail it back to New Zealand. So there you go. And I think New Zealand's going to be a U.S. military base before long. Mark my words.
World power military base.
Mm.
Remember, the U.S., who the U.S. is still controlled by. Hello, Queen.
Thank you.
And the Queen is a dame of the Knights of Malta and answers to the Pope.
Didn't the Pope excommunicate the royals back in the day, you know, for making up the King James Bible and stuff? Or was it, what's his name? No, King Henry VIII. Yeah. He was like, you know what? I'm going to create my own English church. But why is that? Because I got syphilis and my wife won't sleep with me and I can't get divorced for her because of the Catholic Church. So you're just going to make up a new religion because you can't get laid?
Yes.
All right, well, you're the king.
Pretty much. I mean, that's what the man was credited.
But just think about that. It's like the ultimate papal cock block.
Well, the man who is credited with starting Christianity, or I'm sorry, with starting the Catholic Church, the Holy Roman Catholic Church, is Emperor Constantine, the man who commissioned the writing of the Bible. Did Constantine care about the message of Christ? Heck no. Constantine worshipped Mithra. As a matter of fact, he had over a 30-foot statue commissioned to be built of himself as the god Mithra. And when you look up the history of the god Mithra, he is portrayed as the pagan Christ.
Hey, wait a second. Didn't the word Mithra also involve the word myth? Is there any etymological kind of significance there?
You would certainly think so.
Hmm. Sorry, continue.
So here you have essentially the church adopted Christianity, but all they did was give Christian names to the existing pagan holidays. It's an extension of the church. The Church of Rome is basically the religion, the old religion of Rome in its Mithra worshiping days, and they took Mithra worship and they kept their holidays and gave them Christian names. And they got everybody they paid off the ruling class to buy into it. When they got the Bible, do you think they wanted anybody to know what was written in the scriptures? Especially, you know, you have Mithra worshippers, and now they're adopting a large part of the Hebrew canon, the Hebrew holy text, including the most sacred books, the Torah. And you're making that part of your religion? A bunch of Mithra worshippers are going to convert to Christianity? Yeah, you guys hold on to that dream. Go research every holiday the church holds, and it has a pagan origin, which can be traced right back to guess where? Ancient Samaria. Almost every world empire still celebrates the same holy days as the Anunnaki invented for us back in Samaria. How about that? How about that? So it's the same repetitive nonsense by the same alien or extraterrestrials, interdimensionals, which have kidnapped us. Now, I keep on going back to that kidnapping. Let's take a look at this real quick. We've got two new life forms, perfect DNA. Perfect. And when you examine the account, they're living together, they're naked, and they're happy. And then the serpent comes along and says, hey, eat this fruit. You'll be just like God. You see, they were children of God, and it's like fish. How does a fish know it's wet? Once it gets out of the water, it realizes, hey, I'm wet. I'd rather be back in the water. How did they know that? They got to know something's just like God, but they already were God-like. They weren't going to die. They had perfect DNA. They communicated with God on a daily basis, according to the scriptures. At least Adam did. And so now they eat this fruit. They're very comfortable before eating the fruit being naked together. But after they eat the fruit, uh-oh, we're naked. And then they hear the voice of God, and they become afraid, and they hide themselves. And God says, well, why are you hiding? And I said, well, we were naked, and we were afraid that, you know, wait a minute, who told you were naked? Did you eat from the fruit? Now, you see, you go back to this proverbial fruit here. And could the fruit have contained a virus which erased part of the human genome, erased part of the DNA, the part that would bring it all together and make it complete? Huh. I asked a genetic engineer that one time. A girl who just got out of college, she had a dual master's degree. One of them was in genetic engineering. Biochemistry and genetic engineering is what her two majors were. And I asked her, is it possible to figure out if that genetic code ever existed? Or is it, you know, could it have been erased? Is there any way of telling? Could it have been erased? And she thought about it. She said, no. It we could very well have had some of our genetic code erased and there'd be no way of telling. And so, could a virus do that? Yeah, it sure could. Don't eat from that fruit. It'll kill you. Why was the fruit put there? You gotta ask the people who kidnapped us. Because once that connection was broken, once the DNA was broken, it's interesting, some things that were said, God gets upset. He turns to the serpent. He says, you do this? And the serpent, is like, he says, because you did this thing, you're going to crawl on your belly on the dust of the ground. And your seed, and this is interesting, this is the first prophecy of the Bible. It says, I will put enmity between your seed and the woman, and the woman's seed and yours. And your seed will bruise him in the head, but her seed will bruise, I'm sorry, your seed will bruise him in the heel, but her seed will bruise you in the head, your seed in the head. And this is the first biblical prophecy. But the woman's seed, the serpent's seed, what is this? Two genetic lines, two different strains of DNA? Ah, is that why reptilian shapeshifters are ruling over us? And that's why they interbreed, to keep the serpent seed pure, to keep that cold-blooded, maniacal, I'll kill anybody, anywhere, anytime, and even eat my own young. That serpent seed. And then you have the woman seed, caring, loving, giving, motherly. Someone you want to cuddle when you are upset with. I don't care how old you are, mom's mom. But when you were a child, mom was your refuge. So these two genetic lines were talked about. Again, back to genes. You can't understand this unless you know genetics. So we have these two seeds with us today. Now, most of us have a good 50-50 blend of each. However, those of us with more of the woman seed are more likely to wake up. Not only that, but we can mentally change our own DNA. So the more you focus on the good, the positive, and the loving things, the more your DNA will change that way. Your brain will fire more synapses in that direction. It'll create new neurological paths, and you'll be focused more on a doing good type paradigm as opposed to murder and mayhem. So we can change or influence our own DNA. Now, what does that bring us today? We have some people waking up, some people never wake up. But let's go back and let's look. What was the prime directive? God said, let us make man in our image. Us, our, plural, who was being talked to? Well, obviously, God was talking to the genetic engineers. He said, okay, you guys got the design, but let's make man in our image. What's the image of God? What is the image of Yahweh? It is in our soul and the purity of light which we reflect. How we interact with others. Are we there to help others? Are we there as loving individuals? Now, here's an interesting thing. Before they ate the fruit, they were comfortable being together. After they ate the fruit, they took flight. They were frightened. Now, the mind, or I should say the brain, has four operating speeds to it. Beta, which is where fight and flight reside. It is the reactionary part of our operating system. And our brain cycles somewhere between 16 to 22 cycles per second in beta. Then there's alpha. Alpha is where we have to go to meditate or pray. Interestingly enough, if you're making love, most likely you're an alpha. If you're relaxing and daydreaming, you're an alpha. The next step down is theta. And in theta, you are at a state of meditation where you now can visualize and see things clearly, and you can start to see, or what is called remote view. You can send your consciousness beyond the third dimension. When your brain slows down even slower and goes into delta, this is where people report having out-of-body experiences. Interestingly enough, I was in a coma, and while in a coma, I heard a voice. It said, come with me. And I was actually in one part of New York in a hospital in a coma, and I was instantly transported to another part of New York, and I'm watching the birth of my youngest child. I was watching it like I was at the ceiling looking down, watching the birth. And who was that that said, come with me? Now, interestingly enough, when I came out of the coma, my mom was standing over me. And the first words out of my mouth were, Ma, call so-and-so. She had the baby. And my mother looked at me like, son, I know you just came out of a coma. What's wrong with you? But she had the most confused look on her face. And she said, okay. And she went. She left. I passed back out. Next time I opened my eyes, my mother was standing there again. She said, congratulations, you have a son. Come with me. And I got to see it. And when I came to, I told her to make the phone call. I also had what's called a near-death experience. And this is interesting. No one has the same experience. Whoever has a near-death experience, there are no two near-death experiences the same. Everybody gets a different little message. When I died, I was in the process of dying. I was being wheeled down a hospital corridor on a gurney, and I couldn't move. I could only move my eyes, and I know I was in trouble, and I know I was dying. I could see a doctor, and I could see nurses around me, and I couldn't tell them that something was wrong, and I was dying. And the next, and I can see the ceiling and them, and everything's in color. And the next second, I'm looking down at them wheeling me away on a gurney, and everything's in black and white. And I can feel myself being pulled away from my body. My life didn't flash before my eyes, but I was upset. I was angry. I was in a state of, I wouldn't say terror, but I didn't want to die, and I knew I was dying because I had just got married. I just had a kid. I started a whole new chapter in my life, and now here I was. I was literally being pulled away from my body. And I figured, this is it. And all I could see about myself was that my consciousness could see this white mist, cottony looking stuff, this energy that I was in, and I could feel myself being pulled further and further away from my body, and I could see there was just the tiniest little wisp coming out of my chest. And when I turned my focus to see where I was being pulled to, there it was, the great white light, a huge white orb of pure energy, and I was connected to it, and it was pulling me into it. And then it stopped, and the energy was no longer pulling me, but it started to push me away from it, and it put me back in my body. Boy, you want to talk about visions and dreams I had during that little episode. I came to understand something, though. I came to understand what the soul is in our connection. Now, people may understand what Carillion photography is, where it was developed by a Russian scientist who had the last name Carillion, and he developed a method of photographing someone to catch the energy field coming out of their body. You know, everybody's got this different experience, and here we have in our body, what is in our body that leaks out, what is captured on Carillion photography is our soul. And that is, our body is a container for the soul. And my experiences and most other experiences of people who have near-death experiences that we all go back to God. Everybody's experience is different, but everybody sees the great white light. So here there is intelligence. There is a brain, I won't say a brain function, but a consciousness of who you are, which is enveloped in an energy field, which is that little piece of God. It's our own divinity. It's our own personal little God particle. It is the image that we are made in. Our physical body is dictated by the planet Earth itself. We have to work within the parameters of the Earth, and indeed our DNA has all the DNA of the planet on it. So we're a perfect match. We have a perfectly designed body to function on this planet, inhabited by a spiritual soul, which is who we actually are. Now, here's another part of our own divinity. Every healthy woman is born with 400,000 eggs in her ovaries, approximately 400,000 eggs. In order for her to use all of her eggs, she would it would take 35,000 years, passing one a month. She would have to live 35,000 years. Men never stop making sperm until they die. So we have a reproductive system, which then gives us the other part of this prime directive, where God says, let us create man in our image. And he gives the, so he says, so he creates the male and female, and he gives the prime directive, be fruitful, become many, and fill the planet. Have a good day. I'm out of here. It's the seventh day. I'm taking a rest. Be back in 7,000 years. You all have a good time. Shortly thereafter, the human race is kidnapped by interdimensional extraterrestrials, and the history of the Bible starts. Now we are at the end. We're at the end where this entity that we call Jesus is talked about as returning as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We already talked about several different types of entities, including the demonic forces which are here. Here's an interesting little side note. The world wants disclosure. We want to know that aliens are out there. We have the technology to do genetic engineering, and we can genetically engineer a body that can be spiritually inhabited by the soul of a Nephilim, and we can create our own alien invasion. We have the technology. Think about a million alien bodies. You know, like Star Wars, what is it, the War of the Clones or whatever that episode is, where they've got all the clones, where they're manufacturing all these clones?
Attack of the Clones, episode 2, yeah.
There you go, Attack of the Clones. Well, here they come. We have the technology, and so we hear about all these underground bases, possible bases on the moon, possible bases on Mars.
The planet, or the race of creatures that was creating all those clones were called Caminoans. Now, in Spanish, El Camino means the way to go. So were they trying to tell us that cloning is the way to go?
Gee, you would think so. See, isn't that what science tells us? You know, we can bioengineer your children for you so we can get out all the bad stuff so they don't get anything like diabetes, or you don't have to worry about Down syndrome, you know, and they're not going to be born with an extra toe. We can, designer babies. No heart conditions, no brain malfunctions. Yeah, genetically engineering our own children. You remember that song? Well, you probably don't, but there's that song back in the 70s that came out. In the year 2525.
I've heard that song, yeah.
If man is still alive, if woman can survive. No, we're never going to make it that long under this paradigm. So we need a paradigm change. And this is what I explain in Letters to Earth. You can't survive Armageddon, because the paradigm change of Armageddon is to bring this corrupt system of evil, which is being controlled by these rebel alien life forms, which kidnapped us 6,000 years ago and have blessed the maniacal rulers of this world, who wouldn't think twice and in fact have planned snuffing out biological life on Earth. Now, that's their paradigm. The prophecies say that the King of Kings and Lord of Lords is going to be coming shortly after a Nibiru-type event, which could very well happen the spring of 2016. The moon turned to darkness before the Passover and before the release of the nation of Israel, God's chosen people. Jesus said that the day is coming, that no flesh would be saved if it were not for the chosen ones. But because of the chosen ones, those days will be cut short. Because of the chosen ones, the chosen people. Who are the chosen people? Those people who can operate in a state of love in Alpha and leave the Beta, fight and flight behind. You see, when that fruit was eaten, humans were given the Beta operating system of the mind, where we could fight and kill. And the worst thing that you can do is give an entity that has the right, the free will, put them in Beta, where they're going to fight and kill each other or cause mayhem, where people are going to have to flee, where we are in a reactionary state all the time. You know, if you're in that state of Alpha, and it's interesting, in Revelation, Yahweh speaking about himself refers to himself as the Alpha and the Omega. And when you're in that state of Alpha, you're in a state of relaxed love. You're in a state of caring. You're in a state where you feel at peace with yourself and the world. So guess what? The beta test of Earth has failed, and it is time for a new paradigm. Under the new paradigm, we get our DNA repaired. This Earth gets repaired. The Fukushima radiation, all of the nuclear waste that's been dumped, all of the toxic waste that's been dumped, all of the stuff that's killing the planet can be changed quickly. How? String theory gives us the answer. Change the vibration of the atomic structure of the toxic ingredient. Once the vibration changes, the ingredient changes, or the atomic structure changes, so the properties of that item change. And so guess what? With a sonic blast or a vibrational blast, nuclear radiation is no longer an issue. All the pollution is no longer an issue. It can all be made inert just by vibration, controlling the vibration. The Earth will be restored. It'll be brought back to its original paradigm. And once we are restored to the original paradigm, to get an idea of where that original paradigm will bring us, the only record of perfect human DNA on the Earth since the time of the first seeding of the first human couple is that of the Christ, the Messiah, Yeshua, Jesus. There was perfect DNA. What could he do? According to the record, he could walk on water, change water into wine, control the weather, raise the dead, cure the sick, heal the blind, feed thousands with leftovers. And could you imagine if we were like that? All of the inhabitants of Earth had those abilities? And when we get to Revelation, the 21st chapter, it says that there will neither be mourning nor pain nor outcry anymore. Death will be no more. The former things will have passed away. I mean, we're not going to die. We'll overpopulate this planet in no time. No, for the tent of God will be with mankind. We will have that spiritual connection. We will have more than what we can understand. We will have abilities we have no idea about right now. And there are trillions of Earth-like planets just waiting to be inhabited by human children of God. And that, my friends, is the prime directive, not just for Earth, but for the third dimension. That is what the intention was for the human children of God. To fill the third dimension with love. I'm going to give you, we're going to end with this note. What is God? Very quickly. We know by physics, you can neither create nor destroy energy. And when you go to Revelation, we are told that Yahweh is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning, the end. Before him, it says nothing existed, and after him, nothing will exist. Now, we know we can neither create nor destroy energy. So that means that at one time, there could have only existed pure dynamic energy, the God particle. And we know this energy was intelligent. We know it was conscious. It was alive. And something caused this energy to change. This energy came up with a concept which changed it into the 10-dimensional plus multiverse in which we live. Because it all connects back to the vibration of the God particle across all the dimensions. So what was it that inspired this pure dynamic energy to change and become an event horizon, the Alpha horizon? It was a concept. It was the concept of love. It works on so many different levels. You can love your car. You can love your house. You can love your dog. You can love your kids. You can love your parents, your family. You can love that significant other like no one else can. You can love so much and never run out of love. And you can get so much, and you, the more you get, the better you feel. The more you give, the better you feel. And so in 1 John the 4th chapter, the 8th verse, we read, God is love. Maybe that's why Jesus told us the greatest commandment was to love Yahweh, your God, with your whole heart, soul, and mind, and to love your neighbor as you do yourself, because he's your brother, regardless of his skin, regardless of what they look like, regardless of where they grew up, what religion they studied. They're human. They're children of God. And they're our brothers. Think about that. So we don't want to take up arms and go to war against our own brothers. This is an interdimensional war. It's time to sit this one out and let the King of Kings come to power on his own time. We have a fantastic future ahead of us. And like I like to say, if you're not around after Armageddon, you're going to miss a whole lot of loving. Because there's going to be a whole lot of loving going on after Armageddon. And if you're not there, you are definitely going to miss it. Because we will rebuild. We will have that original prime directive restored. And it'll give you something to do. You know, just think. You always wanted to be king of the world. How'd you like to have your own planet? One where every person on that planet was your child, grandchild, great-grandchild. You know what? At this stage of the game, we're even going to throw in an option on a galaxy. Folks, you can have for today and today only, you can not only have a planet, but if you sign up, you can have your own galaxy because there's plenty of them out there.
And with there and you can pay for it in installments.
You know what? We're going to give it to you free.
No, even better. You can pay for it in installments via credit card.
Sure, you can pay for it with a credit card. Why not? But, you know, that is the eventuality. This is the beginning. This is the shakeout period. This was the beta test, and the beta test failed. Folks, do you want to live in a beta fight and flight, reactionary lifestyle for the rest of your lives, being ruled by maniacal people who just soon see you dead? Or would you rather live your life in a state of love, a state of harmony, a vibration that also synchronizes with the very planet in which we live? Yes.
That state is called Colorado because they just legalized weed.
You know, God said that everything that produced seed was good to eat. So here is where the law of man has overstepped the law of God by it making a plant which grows naturally on this planet illegal. Enough said about that topic because we can talk about that. That's a whole another show. But here's where we are. We're at a time where we have to awaken, and reading letters to Earth will give you the answers where we came from, why we are here, and what our future is going to be. With that, folks, I'm going to say thanks for listening. It's been a pleasure to be able to talk to everyone here. Love and blessings to all. Visit my website. Download a PDF copy of Letters to Earth. It'll cost you $5. I don't know. I'm sure your exchange rate is pretty close to ours. You can start reading it tonight. www.peterkling.com. Join me on Facebook. I got some great Facebook friends. There's still room there. We keep track of the world and what's going on. We live in critical times, difficult to deal with. It's time to prepare for the worst, pray for the best. Love and blessings to everyone. Have a great night.
Indeed. All right. And also, ladies and gentlemen, bear in mind this is a listener-supported broadcast. So if you do like the idea of interviewing great thinkers and authors and MDs and lawyers and journalists and goodness knows who else kind of people have got on the show. But if you like that idea, if we're doing it commercial-free, if you're letting people have a few laughs and that kind of thing, and if you like the old entertaining factor as well as the fact that you're actually learning something every single show, I certainly am, then please, for the love of Norwegian cheese, go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't, go ahead, make my news. And donate today. And the other preference that we have here is to make a regular donation. You can donate as little as $1 a month or as much as $100 a month as some listeners do. And all it does, just pay for all the facilities so that we can continue producing the show for you. And the media is not doing their job, so I'm not going to complain about them. I'm just going to go ahead and freaking replace them because they're no longer relevant. All right. Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll see you again sometime, assuredly.
You are the only exception. You